Say something, goddammit. You're on television. You're live to the whole world.
Hello and welcome to another movie podcast. This is Oscar, and with me today is someone who loves fucking, you know, time-lapse, just like a lot of darkness of audio.
Oh, I'm invited to introduce myself?
Yes.
Oh, okay. My name is Raphael.
Like his first day. And Luke will not be with us today.
Sorry, this is I was just playing a part for Luke.
Yeah, no, clearly. This is episode number 63, close to 69. I know Luke can hear that one too. And if you're listening to the first time, what we typically do here on the show is that we review three films in one go. Most people do one. Fuck that. We do three, but we're also bi-weekly. So even it's not better. Anyway, we're doing three films today, and those films will be Bohemian Rhapsody, which is, you know, the biopic of the year. Everyone's going to watch it. Everyone's already probably seen it.
I heard it fucking made so much money.
Oh, yeah. I bet. I don't know the numbers, but I'm sure it did. Yeah. And we'll be talking about another biopic by Gus Van Sant himself. It's called Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot.
Probably didn't make any money.
Nope. The opposite of money.
Right,
probably. And we'll conclude our show with a review of our next, I believe our fourth or fifth marathon pick from our Steven Spielberg marathon.
Wait, don't tell me.
What?
Empire of the Sun.
Yeah. Well, you should know, considering that you're doing the show with me.
Shouldn't you be glad I know?
Yeah. But that's like the bare minimum.
Right.
It's like,
there you go. I did the bare minimum.
It's like you want me to be happy that you know what 1 plus 1 equals.
Right, but I do know what 1 plus 1.
I know, but I'm not going to get you a reward for it.
Well, I don't want a reward.
Adoration is a reward.
Is it?
Yeah, kind of.
Okay.
I mean, okay. Anyway, Luke, who is our typical third host, co-host, is not with us today. He got called suddenly for work, even though these are the films he picked. Actually, incorrect. He picked a movie called Mid-90s, which is Jonah Hill's directorial debut.
Maybe we should do that as a bonus.
Maybe. Did it come out in November?
November, yeah.
Huh. I haven't decided. No, I did decide on the bonus. I can still change it, though.
Yeah, we can. I still want to watch this movie.
Okay.
Don't get me wrong.
Okay.
Actually,
well, I'll decide.
You're off tomorrow, right?
Yes.
Perfect. I'm off tomorrow, too.
Good.
Oh, not really, but I get out at 1:30.
I was going to say, like, okay. Anyway, let's just talk about this later. Anyway, he's typically with us, but he had to call off work. Even though these are his movies, we still have to review them, of course. So he's just going to miss out on it. Empire of the Sun is his choice also, which just sucks because he should be here for it. But, you know, we all know he loves biopics. Again, if this is your first time, you should know that off the bat. So where you can find us, though, if you wish to find out all of our other shows and bonus episodes and marathons and fucking top tens and shit, you can check out our podcast's website. Otherpodcast.com is the website. And I almost fucked up that word.
Totally
there.
Did.
Almost did, I said. I solved it, figured it out at the end. Yeah. And what we do for bonus episodes, if you don't know what they are, is that every month we choose a film. Might be mid-90s for this month. And any people who donate to our show, any amount, by the way, that person will get a bonus episode of that month's review instead of waiting 5 months later. For every 5 months, we release the current month's review because we don't want to just archive them for no one to listen to or most people not to listen to them. So
correct,
that's though. Obviously terrible podcasting as well. So we do release them. So the 5 months ago, this month, what came out was, let me see, it's Hereditary. That's what came out. Roth and I did a review of that film. You probably forgot what we did, what we talked about.
Totally did.
But it's okay. The viewers will know soon. It'll be after this show. It'll be after this show. Before the next show, it'll come out. So that's what's coming out this month. And the bonus episode for this month, right now, what I picked before you said Mid-90s, it was going to be Overlord.
Oh, yeah.
Which looks like a super interesting, like, Nazi.
It doesn't look interesting to me at all.
Really? It looks like fun. It looks like hella fun.
It looks completely
fun horror.
You know what? Maybe it's because it has that
what?
AC/DC song in there, and I just don't like it.
So you just blame the marketing people?
I do.
For that?
Mm-hmm.
Don't blame them for that.
Why not? They're supposed to entice me to watch a movie.
Yeah.
And they did the opposite.
Well, the movie's still not that, though.
I'm going to blame the trailers. This is why I don't watch trailers.
Well, stop watching it. Just forget it. Like you forgot how
I try to bring my... I totally did. I might have to rewatch that one. I try to bring my headphones, and then I get called like antisocial for not watching things with people. And
like, do you care what people call you now?
No, I don't. But,
okay.
You know, but I get bugged. Like, I'm trying to listen to a podcast.
You get insect?
Insected, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it might be Overlord, might be mid-90s, but honestly, there's not a lot of great showings. Apparently, it's either nighttime for mid-90s or not at all. And my days off, I only have the afternoons really to do it. So we'll see about that. But right now it's Overlord. If I change it, I change it. Check the website again, guys. It'll be up there. Another thing we do here is something we call recent discoveries. Before we get to our reviews, what we do is that we talk about the films or TV specials or sometimes miniseries on occasion that we've seen outside of the three films we're reviewing. So without further ado, Ralph, you're going to start us off. You have one thing only, and it is a TV comedy special. What's it called?
Yeah, I normally don't bring it up, but it's just so I don't feel left out.
Right, I have two things. You have one thing, exactly. Not a big deal.
Sure. Yeah. I've been watching a lot of TV, just like TV shows.
Me too. I just caught up with GLOW, watching Making a Murder season 2.
Yeah, I don't care about that.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. Your TV shows and my TV shows are different.
Yeah.
I was watching BlizzCon, you know, I was watching stuff like that. So. Yeah. Anyways, I saw Jerry Before Seinfeld. I totally forgot the name until right now.
I was about to tell you.
Yeah, I know. You look like you were. This is a comedy special kind of explaining. It's a weird thing. It's like he's talking about his life. This is about Jerry Seinfeld, in case if you didn't know. Talking about his life, how he started, what inspired him to be a comedian, like how he wanted to be one and stuff like that. And he goes back to where he first started doing stand-up, and he does a show there. And if you like anything of Jerry Seinfeld comedy-wise, then you'll enjoy it, obviously. It does... I want to say it feels dated, but it's not. It's a style. It doesn't feel dated because it's still funny. For me, anyways. It was still funny for me, even though it felt corny-ish. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it was still funny. So it was still well done on my end. From my perspective, should I say.
Right, right.
I thought it worked out overall. I like the set that he shows. And they do these quick scene cuts of, you know, him doing other stuff. Or him... footage of him when he was performing and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it was an interesting comedy special to watch. I noticed that Netflix kind of just lets him do carte blanche, and instead of doing just like a simple, and I'm glad that they're taking the liberties of like, hey, let me not just do a comedy special and do my 1 hour and I'm good, you know?
Right.
And a lot of people do that, and don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with that, right? If you want the material, that's awesome, right? But I like that he went a different way about it. He wanted to explain, you know, kind of show something else on top of what he's explaining.
Yeah.
In this, for his comedy. And I thought it worked out well.
Good.
So overall, it was funny. A little bit over an hour, I think it was. Bless you.
Thank you.
So, yeah, if you go to Netflix original, there's a billion of them. So, yeah, go ahead and
they really are.
Watch if you like Jerry Seinfeld.
I believe this came out last year, though.
I think it did it for me. Yeah.
I remember seeing it a while ago. It wasn't this year, I don't think.
Yeah, but I just saw it.
Yeah, no.
You to me.
No.
So go fuck yourself.
We do. Fuck you.
Yeah. I know, you're trying to defend yourself so
hard. Yeah, no, I wasn't trying to defend you. You misunderstood, bitch.
I know.
No, I know you did. You're just trying to make me look like a bad guy.
Right.
I dropped my phone.
Of course, smooth.
God, damn it.
Anyways, go ahead. Dead air?
Dead air time, yeah. No, I got two movies here. One, well, both are our newest. New films here. One of them is The Old Man and the Gun.
Better than me?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
The Old Man and the Gun.
How was that?
Well, let me read the description first. Based on the true story. Is this a true story? Anyway. Forrest Tucker, from his audacious escape from San Quentin at the age of 70 to an unprecedented string of heists that confounded authorities and enchanted the public. Wrapped up in the pursuit are Detective John Hunt, who becomes captivated with Forrest's commitment to his craft, and a woman who loves him. I'm not reading the last part of that sentence because it actually spoils the movie. Why would they do that? Okay, everyone, don't read the description of this movie in IMDb because literally it's like a weird little point where you don't know if she knows. Stupid. Anyway, this movie stars Robert Redford, Casey Affleck, Sissy Spacek, Danny Glover, sorry. Tom Waits. Tom Waits is in this movie, Ralph. You know who Tom Waits is?
No, I'll look him up.
It's a fucking great singer-songwriter. And a bunch of other people, Gene Jones, for example, John David Washington, who sounds really familiar. Anyway, this is written and directed by David Lowery. I like some of his films, actually. It's pretty good film stuff. He did Ain't the Body of Saints. I haven't seen a Ghost Story yet, believe it or not, not yet. Anyway, so this movie is... do you remember, Ralph, that movie Hello, My Name is Doris?
Yes.
You remember how charming we found that movie? Did we review it? I think we did, right?
I think we did.
Remember how charming we found Sally Fields and that whole movie, even though it's like a very basic movie, like a rom-com for a slightly older, right? for like a slightly older rom-com for the new age. And remember how charming we found her performance and the way the movie kind of treated her and stuff? Same thing here, except that it's this guy, Robs Banks, and that's his love. That's his passion. Robert Redford, super mega charming. It's so wonderful to see him rob banks. And more importantly than that is what the witnesses testify, or when they give their statements to the detectives, how they describe him is the funniest awesome thing in the movie. And so the movie doesn't treat criminal or crime quite the same way. It's more airy, more breezy, more, you know, simple. Like it keeps it really simple. It keeps a guy basically keeps a character on a certain like pedestal in a way, which can be, you know, not great if you want. It's something more complicated, but it's not the movie at all. When you first start watching, you can tell right away. And, you know, the movie shows quite a bit of the robberies, and it takes place in the 70s, 80s, something like that, I remember. And the guy's like 70 years old, like I said, like the description said. And he meets Sissy Spacek, and her and him are fucking awesome together. You just want them talking all day. They have these diner conversations left and right. It's great. I don't know. I just found the movie very charming. Casey Affleck plays the detective trying to hunt him down, and it doesn't really quite work the way he wants it to. But his, you know, the movie goes into his personal life in a way that doesn't seem too forced. You know how they show detective's life? It's like, oh, you know, on the edge of divorce, and his kid hates him, or whatever. Or even if it's the opposite of that, the movie, like most movies, feels forced, and this movie feels like he has a good support system that helps him, like, you know, get that wedge in him to want to find this guy. It actually supports really well. I don't know what David Lowery wanted to do this, because the movie does have a strange, not a real period ending to the movie that I felt unsatisfied. I felt like the ending needed something more. Obviously, I'm not going to spoil it for you, but if you do watch it, maybe we can talk about it then. Besides the ending, and you know, it was a fine movie, and not super serious. Really fun to watch. I recommend it. It's really enjoyable.
All right.
Hella charming. I don't think there's anything else to extrapolate from the movie, but that's another biopic, I just realized. So there you go. The Old Man and the Gun. And no, he never fires it. All right. So my second film here is... I already totally forgot. Oh, yeah. That's right. I have to do this. There you go. It's a documentary that we almost reviewed, Ralph, 2 shows ago. 3 Identical Strangers. Do you remember this one?
No.
You remember that I chose it once and then I just changed it for Hold the Dark?
When we reviewed
that movie? You remember? Okay, well, wow. New York, 1980. 3 complete strangers accidentally discover that they are identical triplets, separated at birth. The 19-year-old's joyous reunion catapults them into international fame, but it also unlocks an extraordinary and disturbing secret that goes beyond their own lives and could transform our understanding of human nature forever. Very, very much a big one there. Okay. This is a documentary that's making kind of a sleeper hit. It came out of the blue, and everyone started talking about it. So, obviously, that's why I wanted to see it a few shows ago, and I finally saw it yesterday, actually. This movie's hella fun. So that premise of the movie, you think the movie is just about that. You know, the movie opens with these 2 19-year-olds who happen, like this one kid, one of them, 19, going into a community college. And everyone's like saying, hey, you're back. Nice to meet you. And they're calling him a different name. They don't know that that's not the guy that they're clapping for and that they're happy to see. And from that point on, you know, they get acclaim. And then that's read by the triplet in the newspaper. Like, dude, that guy looks like me. And it's like, you think that's the premise of the movie. And you think the movie is going to be about how these 3 are similar but different, what led to the circumstances of their separation. And it does go into that. But the more they go into it, the more the story keeps unfolding on itself. And it becomes like a thing about scientific study that no one knew about, and no one still knows the answers to them, and some of them have been released and some of them haven't. And throughout the while, the movie is very charming in the footage they use to tell you how these triplets love living with each other from 19 years old on, and how some tragedy does strike them, how finding their mother is important, things like that. And the movie keeps it very nice. It almost feels like a movie, almost like it written kind of like a movie, but okay. It's not. because it's all actual footage, all of them, and they have interviews with the triplets, and it does have a surprise ending that I'm not gonna ruin it here, a personal one, but between them, but it's really good. It keeps you going. It's really nice to watch, kind of hard to watch at some point, and don't want to say too much other than you can look it up yourself. They have a lot of footage on them, based out of New York, and the movie focuses also on the similarities of these three growing up having the same, a lot of the similar things that you'd be surprised about, even though they've been separated their whole lives. It's amazing how much of that is still similar, and their differences, because they were all raised in completely different kinds of households, from different classes, mm-hmm. and riches and so on, and backgrounds. But like, it's amazing the differences and similarities that the movie extrapolates, that you can't help but wonder if, like, it becomes like a question of, like, Mother Nature versus nurture kind of thing. And it just makes you wonder about that in a nice, nice, cool way. Anyway, I liked it a lot. Three Identical Strangers. You can find that for rent or buy now. So I recommend it. There's a lot of stuff I haven't said because a lot of stuff is really cool to discover in the movie itself. I'll let you borrow it, Rob. I have it downstairs.
Cool.
All right. So that's what we've been watching. And we're going to get into our first review here, finally. And that movie will be, what was it? Some singing?
Bohemian.
Bohemian Rhapsody. Terrible title. I'm sorry.
Agreed.
Bohemian Rhapsody.
I mean, it's not terrible. It's just they could have done something better.
Anything. Yeah, you're right. Stay with us.
I enjoyed the show. I also write songs. Our lead singer just quit. Then you'll need someone new.
I love the way you move on stage. The whole room belongs to you. Don't you see what you could be?
No one will play us on the radio.
We need to get experimental. Thunderbolts and lightning, very, very
frightening. Do it again. One more.
How many more Galileos do you want?
Roger, there's only room in this band for one hysterical queen.
These words. No one will play Queen.
Fortune favors the bold.
Bohemian Rhapsody is a movie based on the true story of the rock band Queen's journey from the start of the group to their legendary performance at the Live Aid concert at Wembley Stadium. The movie revolves around the group's lead singer, Freddie Mercury's part of the story and his life from being an outcast immigrant in society to a world-famous artist and his struggles through the journey of it. There's no punctuation at all in this, so it was really hard to read. No punctuation at all. Just had to bring that up real quick.
That's funny. Okay. Okay, so for this one, why don't you go?
Why don't I go?
Yeah.
All right. So
I'll go first.
I've been telling these people, you'll really like this movie if you like anything about Queen. And I'm saying right now, you like a song from Queen. So you're going to probably like this movie. There's not a person who's not going to go, oh, yeah, I like that song. Or there's going to be like, ah, I guess that song's okay. No, no, you're going to like one song. They do. I think the movie does a good job of giving us the especially the beginning of giving us like how what Queen was, right? And it wasn't. They did a good job, I think, throughout the movie also of what Queen was, of how it's not just one genre. It's always changing. It's them pushing, you know, the envelope for a lot of things, not just musically, but artistically as well, as in like their performance wise and stuff like that. And the movie does a good job about that, especially if you don't know anything about that, if you've never looked into, like, besides, you know, just listening to music from them, what's it called? Getting a little bit of glimpse of that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So the movie does a good job about that. And obviously, it feels super fast paced in the beginning. And then it feels like someone just slammed the brakes.
At which point? Halfway? Before halfway?
A little bit before halfway, I think.
Okay.
And then we get a lot of stuff that's going on. Obviously, the movie centers a lot more on Freddie Mercury than any other character in the movie. And we know that he is kind of what made Queen happen. You know, without him, there's a lot of stuff that does. You know, I think without anybody, any member of this group, a lot of stuff doesn't happen, right, for Queen.
Yeah.
But But still, I would say he was the face of Queen.
Definitely.
You know, there's no denying that from anybody.
Yeah, same way Gwen Stefani is the face of No Doubt.
Right, exactly. Right. Yeah, so you just can't deny it. Right? Even though they're a group, they're a band, I'm not saying they're not, you know. So that being said, the movie does follow more about him. He's the one who had all the issues. Like, it's the same time. So he's like, who do you follow here, right?
Yeah.
So when we get to it, when we get to the nitty-gritty things, it almost feels, and I hate to say it because that's just his life, right? But it feels like, I've seen this before many times already. Or I've heard it so many times before. The story feels outplayed. But I'm complaining about something that happened to a guy for real. So, like, it's kind of weird, you know? Obviously, this is the dramatization of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not a complete... It's a biopic, right? But it's not like...
Right.
It's not a documentary, right?
Yeah.
So, when you get to it, it just feels so like, oh, like I've seen this already. But, like, you can't knock that movie for what it is. That's what happened. Like, it's shitty.
Yeah.
But overall, I left the movie. The music was great. Don't get me wrong. I was like, I'm not going to not enjoy the movie.
Yeah, especially all that Mick Jagger music.
I did leave the movie going like, the movie has this like one, like it sets up a couple things for you towards the end, and it tries to drive something home to you. And like I brought this up to you before off air, which was it fails for me on the first delivery. And I think it was meant for its only delivery, but it does redeem itself for me mm-hmm. later, like that next, at the end of the movie, it redeems itself for me. And we'll get to that in spoilers, assuming we have spoilers, but we probably will.
We will. Yeah.
So like overall, I did like the movie. I'm coming out positive with the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful setting, beautiful everything. I had no, it was just hella 70s and 80s.
Definitely.
Which I really liked. It was cool because, I mean, it was super embraced because that's what they were. And I will say one thing, very pronounced jawline for what's it called? Rami Malek's character in Freddie Mercury. Because I knew he had that issue, right?
Yeah.
Freddie Mercury did, the real one. But I just, when you look at him, you don't see it that, like, it doesn't look as pronounced.
Yeah.
And it just felt, I guess, because Rami Malek just looks a lot skinnier in comparison.
Well, you know, camera has 10 pounds, mainly in the teeth.
Mainly in the teeth, yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah, that was just interesting. Like, it was just like, it takes a little bit getting used to.
Okay. So, I hear you.
What do you think? Sorry for dragging that on.
No, that's fine. So after my little spiel here, we're probably going straight into spoilers just so we can talk really. This movie is as crowd-pleasing as the music is. Which is to say that the movie doesn't really offer any type of explanation. It doesn't need to offer, and nor does it try, to offer anything other than facts and the creation of their clearly their best music, at least their most popular, as they were making it up like throughout the historical points of Queen's lifespan. And it's funny because I remember hearing... not from a direct source, but some indirect source about that the people, the bandmates are still around. They either said, or I don't know if they disapproved of this movie, or they said something about this movie that they wanted the movie to be focusing more as Queen the band and not Freddie Mercury. But if that was their wish, it failed, because the movie is really about Freddie Mercury. I shudder to think, can you imagine if Freddie Mercury's life was boring? Or at least a lot less tragic. Like, I mean, what would the movie be? Signing over a contract and the pen running out of ink. I'm not saying it's that one to one, but I'm saying like I shudder to think. You know, you can't make a. You have to dramatize something, and I'm sure this movie took great lengths to do something extra. I didn't know until I sat down in the movie theater today to watch it that Bryan Singer directed this movie.
Yeah.
Did you know that going in?
No. Going in, no. I noticed.
That's crazy.
I noticed after when I looked up on IMDb.
Usual Suspects, dude. Valkyrie, dude. X-Men, dude. That's crazy. I guess called as a hit for him because his last couple movies I don't think worked really well. But yeah, this movie is, like I said, I think it tries to hit the major points and hit them in a way that is completely and solely accessible to an audience that loves Queen. Loves or even passingly likes them.
Yeah, it's funny because like that's how I've been, because everyone asks me, because like, people know I watch movies a lot.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, did you watch Bohemian Rhapsody? I'm like, yeah, I saw it. And I was like, and I say it like that. I was like, yeah, I saw it. Like, yeah. And they're like, well, what do you mean? And I was like, well, do you like Queen? Yeah, you'll like the movie. Like, that's why I like, you like the movie.
Yeah, and I love Queen.
That's what I'm saying. I love Queen too. So, yeah. And I didn't want to go and be like, if you don't like the, that's why I kind of said it when I started off. You're gonna like the movie because you like Queen. There's no way like you just if you don't really don't like Queen.
It's almost set up to be against critique, but I can't like I could never love this movie. I could never like I'm not saying I can never rewatch it. It's completely rewatchable probably, but I can never like defend this movie beyond the fact that I grew up loving Queen. Like it's not. It does some stuff really well. Like we'll talk to the ending with the Live Aid report. That was like the best part, and for many reasons, not just because of the build up, but what they did in those scenes. It was so good. I like that a lot.
So good. I mean,
so good.
Talk about camera angles. And
those were good.
Oh,
it made you feel like all I wanted out of this movie, if nothing else. Like I wanted something more complicated. Probably
it felt very much like a something, music video,
right?
Kind of style,
right? Yeah, and we'll
great.
Talk about
it. Great. Yeah,
I wanted something maybe more experimental, of course, because I'm the guy who watches 100 movies a year. I want something different, right? Yeah. So the fact that I knew I wasn't going to get that, all I wanted really was to feel like I was watching a Queen concert, like if I was there in the 80s or 70s, you know, in a way. And it did that in some points. So I guess I got what I wanted.
Yeah.
But ultimately, like, this movie is basically paint by fucking numbers. It looks great. You know, Rami Malek is pretty great.
I really do enjoy the first half of this movie.
His start?
I enjoy a lot of the first half of this movie is really great.
Awkwardness.
Me. For sure. And yeah. I really enjoy all the stuff in between. We're going to get into spoilers, might as well.
Yeah, I'll just go into that. Yeah, spoilers for Bohemian Rhapsody. Like, you haven't fucking seen it, people. Starting now.
How's that?
Higher.
Can you go a bit higher?
If I go any higher, only dogs will hear me.
Try.
Galileo! Galileo Figaro!
Higher.
Jesus, how many more Galileos do you want?
Very, very frightening.
One more.
Galileo!
One more.
Galileo!
Again.
Galileo!
Go on,
Galileo!
Roll the track.
Galileo! Who even is Galileo? Are we done?
That's it.
He dies. Okay. Anyways, spoiler alert. So I love the beginning of this movie.
Yeah.
I love, you know, like small starts. We can't tell if he's gay or not. He doesn't know if he's gay or not.
Right.
And that's really cool. They play with that.
Actually, I do like how the way they brought that because they never really blatantly asked for it. He just like got encountered because gay people knew he was fucking gay. Like,
right.
It was
he
like
he just never knew. Especially right. Because he never even thought his mind. He never crossed his mind.
Not really. Like, exactly. He never let it.
Exactly. Which is really funny because super artistic.
Yeah.
Super artistic / experimental.
Yeah.
So I like the beginning. I like when they're first starting. I like when he joins the band and how they start changing things up. When he riffs that first song, he's like, dude, you're stick to the lyrics. And he's like, no, I got better ones. And he just comes up with it on his own.
Yeah.
And it works out. And he gets to, and in reality, what works for him is that he gets it because he's enthusiastic about what he's doing.
Yeah.
And he amps up people, right? And that's what works. That's what basically works for Queen. That he's such this, he's such an essence, such an energy, you know, a vibrant focus of this band that he amps everybody up along with what the band's doing.
Yeah, usually the most, that's why, you know, when they get into, remember that scene when one of their managers talks about separating him from the band? Such a shady thing, by the way, that happens with that guy. But anyway, they talk about Michael Jackson, right? They talk about, Madonna's never been part of a group, but, you know, Cher, for example, other people.
Yeah.
They grew from these bands and they became their own. Mick Jagger, I think, was one of them. And I think the movie does well enough to show that Freddie Mercury is great with Queen. As great as Queen, never as just Freddie Mercury.
Exactly.
And I think that's probably the driving force of what makes this movie, like the movie's best advocate is probably that message.
Yeah.
And I think it does a good job of it. And it shows like is 110% needs to be helped by the other members. Like the bickering works.
Right, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Dynamics. Like it's almost like Seinfeld wouldn't work if Larry David wasn't there. Yeah. You know, we all give the credit to Seinfeld, but Larry David wrote every episode with him and was a co-creator. And you can't see that show existing without the other.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I 100% agree with you.
Kind of like that. Anyway, that was really good.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot.
No, that's very true, though. And they bring that up, and they're not shy to bring it up that because, you know, he does leave to go do his own thing. And that was super shady with Littlefinger.
Oh, two actors. Oh, here. Tom Hollander and Aidan Gillen, Littlefinger. Yeah. And the other guy is, I'll show you his picture, I guess. He plays the really cool manager that becomes the actual manager later. That guy?
Yeah.
Those two guys almost always play exclusively assholes and traitors and bad people. But in this movie, they're not.
He was their lawyer, right?
Yeah, he was their lawyer at first.
Yeah, he was their lawyer at first, and he becomes like the manager.
He's like, fine, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Right, that was really funny. But those two actors, character actors, always play asshole villains.
Right.
But they are subverting that in this movie. Just so you know, guys. Don't expect them to be bad guys.
Yeah.
Okay,
that is true. They do look very serious, like where they're about to.
Yeah, I just want to say that.
What did you think of the Mike Myers section?
Who was he? I no, I
didn't. You
didn't
know who he was?
No,
you
didn't, I didn't.
You didn't recognize him right away?
Forgot to look for him.
So you should have. So you don't. I didn't even know he was in the movie. To be really honest with you.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I saw it with Luke, mm-hmm. and Luke was like, "How did you not see the intro with the mic?" I was like, "I don't fucking read that shit. Like who's starring this?" I was like, "Who gives a fuck?" Like,
yeah.
I don't care. Like, it's a surprise for me. Like, it's whatever. And I wasn't totally paying attention anyway. Mike Myers, he's the guy that they're trying to sell the album to. When they're in the room.
Oh, that's him?
That's him.
With the glasses and shit?
Yeah, he's like wearing almost his like fat bastard outfit from Austin Powers. Almost.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
It looks kind of like it, just not as big. Yeah, that's him.
Why?
That's why they kept focusing on him. By the way, there's this reference that I totally didn't catch. I had to be told. I hate to be that guy, but I'm honest at the same time. Is that's a scene that pays homage to Wayne's World. Which Mike Myers is in.
Right, of course. He wrote that.
Yeah, so that's in that they make a reference to Queen about the song.
Yeah, about the car.
Exactly.
And then what's that fucking listens to this in the car? Like, that's where everyone listens to the song.
That's exactly what it is.
That's my first thought. Like, I actually thought of Wayne's World because I was thinking of that scene when he was describing
that's
how Bohemian Rhapsody would never be read in the car. Like, then the whole opening of Wayne's World is them listening to it in the fucking car.
Exactly.
Yeah. On the way to a radio show, like a radio program.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
Super Met already.
That was Mac Myers. No, Super Met. I get it now. I just didn't recognize
it's
him.
It's a really
fucking
cool
Mike Myers.
Once you realize,
oh,
I knew it was Mike
Myers,
and I heard it, and I was like, and it just didn't click for me. And then,
right.
And then Luke told me, and I was like, oh, fuck.
Mind blown.
That's,
totally
oh
forgot.
Oh, my God, that's best. It's like,
yeah,
that's like,
that's
I just wasn't even thinking about Wayne's World, you know?
Right.
So.
Huh.
Yeah. Super cool.
Okay. All right. Did anybody else play some character I didn't know from an
not
actor I should know?
No, no,
fuck. Because that fucking
yeah, that was
me.
A cool one. I like how he really sells. He's so trying super hard to sell that
dude,
album. Yeah. Whew, like that was really cool.
Yeah, he has emotions, like, you know, being an asshole about it, forcing him, pressuring him, being nice for a moment, and then he just goes through all the motions.
Right.
I do like how also this, you know, this represents a significant band that is. You know, it's funny because in this particular reason, it's different. But it's like the Dead Kennedys for me, or like No Doubt in a way too. Also, it's like if the lead singer, what makes that band, in this case Mercury, if they ever separated from their band, they would be awful. Example: Mercury himself. Example: I'm sorry, but Gwen Stefani, and I'm sure the forget the singers. Don't hate me, guys, for Dead Kennedys. I just slipped my mind. I think he's dead. Or Ramones, for example. Maybe not Ramones. But anyway, they have distinct voices. You know, you can't imagine Dead Kennedys without that voice. Freddie Mercury makes that voice. He has a very unique voice.
He does.
Where you can fucking do the, oh, yeah, yeah. And you can't ever imagine without him, but he can never exist by himself. I really like thinking about that throughout the movie. It wasn't a point of the movie, not like that, but it was a little bit.
Well, it wasn't a point until they make it a point. But it is that looming thing in the back that you should be paying attention to if you're watching the movie and not just listening to the music,
right?
Or watching the craziness ensue,
right?
Just how much money did they make? Like, it's a really good question because they were
the house. He had a room for each cat.
That was bonkers.
Yeah,
like,
that's before he sold out and left by himself.
Right, exactly. Fucking bonkers.
Right.
Yeah. So So let's get to the end.
Yeah.
I think we're just avoiding it. So. The movie, this is where I was trying to get back to. The movie tries to do this thing where they build up this whole thing about because the movie starts off with him going to play that role, right? The, they're about to sing at the Wembley Stadium.
At the Live Aid.
Right,
yeah.
The Live Aid. At the Live Aid.
Live Aid. Raid.
Raid, yeah. You're just talking about Pokemon now. So at the Live Aid, he's trying to he's about to walk out. He's got they open up this case.
Right.
It's got fucking alcohol, a microphone.
And cigarettes.
Fucking beautiful.
That was great.
And I was like, wow, this is the best case ever. Like this is a party guy right here.
I feel like Face Off.
A little bit.
When they give him the golden guns, yeah, and he opens it as a lighter.
Exactly, I know what you're talking about, yeah. So anyways, that's how it starts off. And obviously we end with bookmark endings, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the movie has all his songs that they play at the Live Aid have a double meaning,
mm-hmm.
right? Especially he just finally, you know, a couple scenes before he came out to his, you know, to his group. He finally apologized for all the dumb fuck tarts things he did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that he basically broke up the group. He didn't. They didn't break up. They just kind of stopped making music.
Yeah.
You know, all the mistakes that he make and all those crazy things. You know, your typical thing, right?
Right.
And then he's got AIDS, and he explains that to them and all this shit, right? And now you hear the song he starts off with, Bohemian Rhapsody, right?
Right.
And everything he says has a double meaning. So, like, before, when you're watching the movie, all the music is coming on, it works out, you know, it works out for the moment, you know. Obviously, it has a meaning in itself,
mm-hmm.
you know. He was obviously already with his family, you know, for Bohemian Rhapsody kind of worked out. Because he's crying when he writes the song. Remember the first time?
Yes.
He's crying because he's like, yeah, I feel like this is how I am with my family, you know, like, kind of like the outcast, which he was.
Yeah.
And in this one, he still is the outcast, but I feel like the message, the music has a double meaning for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like you're supposed to feel everything right then and there. I feel like the movie kind of pressures you into like, well, if you were paying attention and if you know anything about Queen and if you know, you know, you're supposed to get the super feels right here. These are the feels.
Right.
And it just didn't happen for me.
Okay.
So it didn't happen for me right there during the Bohemian Rhapsody part, right? But it did happen to me when he's singing We Are the Champions.
Oh, okay.
So that's why I said that. So it almost redeemed itself. So I don't know if the movie was like threw a red herring for me there at the beginning, but like I said but it didn't. I know it didn't because that's the set list that they played at Wembley Stadium.
Yes.
So it's like it is and it isn't. But I think the movie, thinking about it, I just as it progressed, it worked out really well for me, and it actually did do the feels moment at the very end when he's singing at the end,
so,
and it worked out for me.
Yeah.
So I did like that overall, but I felt like the movie was trying to do it itself, but it felt like this is a moment where you should realize this is where the feels moment should start.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I just didn't get it.
See,
I saw it, but
I got it in the way he was singing some of the lines.
Well, that's the thing.
When he says, I don't want to die.
Right, but that's what I'm trying to say. Right when you said it, you're like, okay, I'm supposed to get the feels moment, right?
Yeah.
But everything registered for me. I saw it. He sang it differently. I read everything, and I was just like, I'm not there.
Hmm.
And I was just like, and I felt like the movie was doing it on purpose. Like, I just felt like it was like, I was pressured.
Right, you felt like the Spielberg thing where, like it's like trying to target your heartstrings on purpose.
Right.
Yeah, I guess I didn't feel that way. I like that scene a lot. I didn't have the feels per se, like capital F, but I had something. I was enjoying it.
Right,
I thought of him being close to death, you know, him admitting to the AIDS thing. And
I really like that everything does reference everything he has. Like, mm-hmm. all the music that they play kind of fits his life and how he sees things differently, right?
Right. And Rami Malek seems to be doing something where he's, like, adding something to it.
Yeah, it does feel like that. That's what I was trying to get to, like, that end part. That's why I do want to rewatch the movie for kind of, like, for that reason. And I want to see how, like, if I can.
Well, that scene can almost be taken out entirely.
Huh?
Just watch that scene. It's like, because you said earlier, it's kind of like.
You can.
It's an expensive music video.
I kind of wanted to watch it again just to make sure I am getting, if it's Rami Malek himself. Mm-hmm. Or if it's, you know, like...
Probably a bit of both,
yeah. But like I said, overall, it does still happen for me. Everything registered for me. I just didn't get that, like, I didn't get that capital F feelings like we were saying earlier.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's funny that he got himself out of his own personal hole. Like, it wasn't the typical, you know, spend many years on rehab or an external force coming in to suddenly save him in some way. No, it was... two or three things. He blinks, he looks up, he's like, the two different peoples that he loved being around, his band and that girl, what was her name? I forgot her name. Mary, I think. They're gone from his life. He drove them away, and he blinks, and he suddenly doesn't want it anymore. And he actually keeps that weird promise when he doesn't want to look at that guy who has been sabotaging his career.
And he never looks back.
And he never looks back. Yeah, he's like, I don't want to see you ever again. Promise me you never see me again. And he's not looking at him.
Right.
That was great. And it's funny how he dug himself out of his own hole. And I didn't know how he was going to get there, per se. But he managed to somehow repair all these burned bridges. And what is it, 10 minutes worth of screen time? And I almost feel like if the movie had been more about his reparation, maybe more about coming out of that hole, instead of being this just like a chapter marker, I would maybe love this movie a lot more.
Yeah, I agree with you. Because I don't feel rushed in comparison to whatever else we got.
Right, or even like, I don't need to know about his childhood per se, but like, I don't know what, but maybe something about his parents and
you don't even need to know about
gay
his
thing.
No, you get not really. A lot of that from the instances you are.
Yeah. You're right.
They're showing off that he was a boxer as a kid. He's an immigrant and all that stuff.
Right, and his reaction to the album being brought out to his bandmates and his girlfriend was it says a lot also about him being very ashamed of anything that isn't Freddie Mercury. That's about him, Farouk being about, is that his name?
Yeah.
And I thought that was super interesting. Had they, dug in a bit more. Would have been interesting when it comes to big movies like this. When they'll do a Prince movie or, Michael Jackson or Elvis. It's been several already about Elvis. Maybe it's too big to make a movie about. But if you have to make a movie, I think the best way maybe is to treat it as if they're being watched by aliens. Like someone who doesn't know the great songs of Queen. Like see them make the process of this hit song that you're going to fall in love with, even though if you know already, but pretend like they don't.
Although they do.
I don't know what, but
I think they do a good job with a lot of some of the songs.
Yeah, some of the songs.
Some of the songs are just
like No One Bites the Dust, I like that.
Really good. Same thing with, what's it called? Not We Are the Champions. What's it called? Yeah, We Are the Champions. The one right before it. I can't think of it now. The two set. I consider them both one song, but they're technically two different songs.
I'm sorry.
He's trying to get the crowd in. We Will Rock You.
Yeah, yes.
Couldn't think of it. I was like, oh my God, I'm drawing blanks. And I know the song. By the way, like that's my one thing. I love shuffling music.
Yeah.
Those two songs have to go next to each other. Like, no, that's for me.
Well, We Were Champions and We Will Rock You?
Yeah, We Will Rock You and We're the Champions. We Will Rock You.
That's the order?
That has to be the order, yeah.
I mean, it does seem like they fit. Also, chanted in sports events all the time.
Yeah.
Right?
It's like the sports song.
I mean,
the sports thing.
Queen had a lot of fucking hits.
They really
did. Jesus Christ. You think back on the numbers, I mean, they had a lot of fucking big hits. Not to mention whatever else from their catalog that's pretty great.
Right, exactly.
That's a lot of hits.
Yeah. So, I think they do a good job of that. Like, they do a good job in the movie for trying to do what you said, show them the process of how it starts, or how the music was made or how it started or whatever.
No, but the thing is, in those scenes, even though we love them, even the We Will Rock You one, when he's talking about a song that the audience can chant to and sing with them without needing instruments, I like that, but it's not the full rendition of it. It's treated like as a memento to something you already know. Yeah. It's not really discovering it as if you've never known it. I'm not saying how do you do that. I don't know. I'm not saying we should really do this, but I think.
I think they play the
biggest. Probably get more success out of it if they do it that way.
Yeah, I think they do that a lot for Bohemian because that's the main song.
Right. He plays it first for his girlfriend.
Right. Well,
off the top of his head.
Then he's also trying to, what's it called? Get the falsetto like the Galileo, it called? And he's trying to get the right octave.
Yeah.
It was really funny.
He kept looking at the needles moving, like not enough. What do you think this movie is called? Bohemian Rhapsody. Yeah, that was funny.
Yeah.
Why is this movie titled Bohemian Rhapsody? Is this another case of like titling the Harry Potter movies Harry Potter? No, wait. I know how it goes. It's Harry Potter and the Tales of Grindelwald or something. They have to include that. Or like the Twilight Saga / Mockingjay Part 7. Like they have to include everything. Yeah. But you know what I'm talking about. Do you feel like it's one of those? Like they have to fucking Because do they know what Bohemian Rhapsody means? Which, by the way, it doesn't mean anything. It's a poem, like the guy said in the movie. Like, yeah. So why do it? The movie doesn't feel like a poem.
No, it doesn't.
It's not poetic, really.
No.
So why is it called that? Just because there's their hit song? That's the number one song?
I guess. It is kind of funny that he says in the movie he doesn't want to be a cautionary tale.
Yeah.
But he totally is a cautionary tale.
I mean, yeah.
He's completely a cautionary tale.
For a lot of things, yeah.
Yeah. For a lot of
probably AIDS mainly.
AIDS mainly. Yeah. But that's what he's like. I don't want to be a poster child and a cautionary tale. No, he wasn't obviously the poster child, but he is a cautionary tale.
Mm-hmm.
But not just for AIDS, because for like, you know, going off the deep end.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's for the poetic reasons, if it's just a song. Honestly, I don't know. I don't know why it's called Bohemian Rhapsody. Don't get me wrong.
Let's think
song.
Of a title. What should it be called? Queen Freddy?
No.
Mercury Rising. That's already a movie called Mercury Rising. Ooh, I got it. Queens, but with the S in parentheses.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because there's a band.
It could be multiple.
Right, and there's four bandmates.
So Queens.
Yeah.
I don't know. What did he say? He says this one line.
What?
When they come up with the band name Queen.
I don't remember. Because of the...
He says something. He's like, "Oh, because we're in servitude of Her Royal Majesty."
Something like that. Yeah.
So you could have called it the. I don't know.
Servitude of Royal Majesty.
Her Royal Majesty. Yeah, royal.
And also his royal. That's like a Bond name, Bond title.
It
too.
Is, yeah, I was just thinking about it. I don't think it is a Bond title.
Majesty's
in
service.
Her service and her, yeah.
Anyway, I just funny
I
exercise.
I don't know
it's
what
okay.
to name it without naming it a song, without saying Freddie Mercury. You could have just named it Queen.
Although it's a nice way to get people to... probably more people can now spell Rhapsody they couldn't before.
Yeah, R-H.
That's really it. I mean, that's it.
Yeah,
that's really
R-H,
it.
R-H, guys. And then after
it adds to the consensus of that spelling
it's
more.
It's not R-A. There's an H somewhere. No.
R-H-A, yeah. And lastly, I wanted to see... They probably didn't have the rights for it, but to see the Under Pressure David Bowie mashup.
Dude, that would have been badass.
I mean, they do kind of play it a little bit. But that would have been awesome if they showed the intro of that or have a cameo of someone playing
it. Yeah, it really would have been. I do like this one scene where they're like, when they're doing the BBC thing, and they're mm-hmm. like, what do you mean we can't play live?
Oh, yeah, they had to, lip sync.
Yeah, we do everything lip sync. Don't worry, no one will tell the difference. And they're like, but I know how to play my instruments.
Right. And also, like, they like, I would know the difference.
Right.
It's weird. It's weird. It's like,
weird.
It's like when you have,
they're like, fuck the BBC.
It's like when you have professional musicians play a rock band, they can't even do it right, even though it's easier, because they're not used to this fake cardboard way, you know, it's like the same thing. It's just funny. Other than that, a nice build up to the ending. I was worried if they weren't going to do like a whole back and forth thing, but they did it pretty much chronologically, and which is okay, I guess. It's manageable. I like the ending, like I said. It's great. Great build up. Love it. It's a good music video at the end. Yeah, overall good performances. A lot of music stuff.
Did you need that little touches like
what?
The manager amping up the treble, you know, making his voice louder? Like, did you need that? Like, you know, I said, do not touch this on the mic on the setting.
Yeah, I think so, because I think that character, again, plays villains everywhere.
He does.
He, I don't know, he kind of won me over in a way that I didn't expect it. Like, he was so respectful.
Like, it's like Freddie Mercury won him over, and then he decides to, like, I'm one of you guys, I'm one of you guys.
Yeah, it's so cool, but he never steps in too much. He's always there to help. He's such a great guy. So, yeah, I totally dug it when he did that. I mean, I don't know how real that is, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying. That's what I was trying to get at. Does it feel realistic to you at all?
Yeah. Also, I mean, was it... I don't know how true this is either. Was it an exaggeration of the movie's part to show that they made most of their Live Aid donations?
No, that's true.
That's a true thing? Okay.
So my understanding, that's true. Now, I can look into it just to make sure, but I'm pretty sure.
Because it looked like they got nothing until Queen came out.
No, that's an exaggeration,
right.
Of course.
Okay.
But basically, the Live Aid... for my memory is like everyone came going and it's like, oh yeah, I saw Queen's performance. That's basically how it went.
Yeah,
people, they were like, oh yeah, I saw Queen's performance. Like, yeah, there was other people there too. Yeah. So it was kind of like that.
Also, the movie treats it like this Live Aid performance is his last before he would die of AIDS. Obviously, it's not true. He died years after this point.
He doesn't.
Not much more years, but he died after this point. And I'm sure it's not his...
93, right?
90-something, yeah, 91, I think. Yeah. He had a... I mean, it's more, it's, this, I don't, this wasn't his last performance, but the movie treats it as it is. Do you feel like that's a cheating? All right.
Huh?
Do you feel like the movie, like, that's cheating in a way or not?
No, it's not, because I think it's the most powerful moment for Queen after everything they've done already. So, because everything they did was obviously sold out many places and stuff like that. But this is, and they make a big deal of it, it's just how gigantic it was. Like, billions of people are watching it in the world. Like, not just like millions. This is the capital B. It's broadcast everywhere, you know, across the world.
Yeah, remember when the planet used to do things like that?
Yeah, we don't
like
care
hands
about
across
shit.
The world.
We don't care about that shit anymore.
You think of that huge Coke commercial, even like they don't do that anymore. No. World's fairs, we don't do that shit no more.
No, we don't care about that. Fuck.
What the fuck?
We just tweet about shit and get.
Why can't we make a Statue of Liberty for Germany or something? Pay it forward.
Yeah,
fuck like that. You know, we don't do that shit no more.
No, that was just cool memes that go around the internet.
Yeah, that's so understatedly stupid.
I agree. Well, but anyways, that because that's just, it's a huge scene for them. It's a huge thing that happened for them. They basically stole the show. They come in late.
Yeah.
They're in the middle of the show.
Yeah.
And they steal the show for people. Yeah. And I like how he's always fashionably late for everything. And it's funny because I thought he was going to be late for his show. He's like doing errands before this Live Aid. He's like,
he's like mending bridges still.
Yeah,
like, what the fuck are you doing?
What the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
What time do you go up? Like in an hour?
Yeah. All right, so that's Bohemian Rhapsody. Looks like we like it. I do like it. Fun to watch. So check it out. It's in theaters right now. I'm positive you have already. And we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll review our second film of the evening. Surprisingly, another biopic called Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot. And he didn't, guys.
Why do you have to say it like that?
He didn't get far on foot.
Don't worry.
I don't know. Just to be funny.
I know.
Stay with us.
Hello.
Hey. Is this Donnie?
Yeah, who's this?
Hey, Donnie, this is John Callahan. I'm the neon cripple from outer space.
Oh, the man with the tangerine hair?
Well, I always thought of my hair as an electric orange. But, yeah, that's me.
Look, I got your number off the board. I'm calling because
I need a sponsor.
I do have a lot of piglets at the moment.
What are piglets? I need a sponsor.
My sponsees are piglets.
That's funny.
Wow. You want me to help you get sober?
Well, I saw you speak, and I really like what you had to say about the two pairs of pants and the one with shit.
So, John, I know, I just, and I don't know if you're serious.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, I call him Chucky.
What?
I don't know, John Callahan.
I'm serious. I am serious. You know, sometimes I just make jokes because I get nervous. But I need something.
You know, every day, like clockwork, at 4 p.m., I get massively depressed.
Well, I'm depressed from the moment I wake up, so got you there.
Listen, we're having a group talk, my place on Saturday. Why don't you drop by?
Ooh, a talk?
Like, we'll talk about Chucky. The other piglets are coming by at 1 o'clock, 4014 Northwest Johnson, W8.
4014 Northwest Johnson, 1 p.m.
Are you talking to me?
All right, thank you. See you then.
Okay. Drink water. Bye.
On the rocky path to On the rocky path to sobriety after a life-changing accident, John Callahan discovers a healing power of art, willing his injured hands into drawing hilarious, often controversial cartoons, which bring him a new lease on life. This is the Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot. The latest by Gus Van Sant. I didn't know he had a movie out this year until Luke chose this for the movie thing. So it was a great choice for Luke. If he was here, I would tell him to his face. But he's not here, is he? Anyway, and this movie stars Joaquin Phoenix as John Callahan. Jonah Hill also here. Rooney Mara. Jack Black is in it for a bit. Tony Greenwood. A bunch of unknown actors. Beth Ditto. Mark Webber. Ronnie Adrian. Cream Gordon. Udo Kier, who I do recognize for sure, he always plays like a weird mad scientist type. Anyway, other actors as well. And this is definitely a biopic based on the real life of this dude from the I guess primarily 80s, but just kind of spans his life in a way not. I'll go first this time. Let's see. This movie, usually, you know, the trappings of biopics and whatnot, actually didn't really annoy me this time. I think, you know, we have, in a way, this is our biopic episode. I just thought of it now.
I suppose you could say that.
Yeah. Wow. Empire of the Sun.
Fucking Luke.
Empire of the Sun. Bohemian Rhapsody, definitely, in this one. Wow. Well, out of the three, this is more to my liking, more to my taste. Primarily because, one, it has what all the other movies also have, which is a great acting and performance by the leading biopic person, the biography subject, right?
Correct.
I don't know if you agree with this, but Joaquin Phoenix is pretty good. Another one of his movies. Yes, like so many movies. So it has that going for it for sure. That's like the minimum that a biopic should fucking have. And that I think it does have an interesting storytelling way. Not exactly unheard of, but an interesting enough storytelling way that keeps it moving.
I feel like the beginning of this movie isn't a biopic. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
I feel like the beginning of this movie isn't a biopic at all. And I feel like when we're not until, I would say maybe the last quarter of the movie, maybe the last third, mm-hmm. or that much, that's when it feels super biopic-y. Other than that,
yeah.
Everything else is kind of feels just like it's a pretty cool story if you don't know who you're talking about, if you don't know the subject.
Right. Sometimes, like, that's the thing. Biography movies work, I think, the best in a subject matter if you know nothing about them. I think that's the best times it works because if they're really bad, you can still tell where the lines are drawn, like where they're trying to be, you know, conventional in that format or that subgenre of movies. But other times, like if it's someone you have nothing about or whatever, you know, if it isn't Bohemian Rhapsody and shit or Queen or whatever, then now you kind of can discover it as you go, and it's better that way.
Right.
However, in this movie, though, I think you're right. I think the maybe its greatest power is that it feels like it's a movie about a guy who is overcoming alcoholism. It isn't about a guy who existed.
Yeah.
And overcame alcoholism.
It does feel like just a guy. You know what? And I think it's a lot of it is based on the performance.
Yeah.
And it's also depends. It's also because you don't realize that I had a feeling it was a biopic movie. I didn't know anything about this movie besides the title.
Mm-hmm.
And that Joaquin Phoenix was in it because Luke wouldn't shut up about that.
Yeah.
But when I watched it, I was like, oh, okay. So it's interesting. I mean, I can see Joaquin is, you know, playing the role. So it felt authentic.
Mm-hmm.
I think just about everything he does feels pretty authentic. He puts a lot of effort into his roles.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't until, like, I guess, like I said, when I got to the last third or so, that I was like, oh, this is about a guy. This is a real guy. And
yes.
Then I finally looked him up mid movie. I looked him up just to quit real quick, and I was like, I was right. It is a guy. I had an inkling when when he's drawing. One of his sketches,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, I've seen that before, but where have I seen it?
Yeah, it looked familiar.
Yeah, it looked
me
super
too.
Familiar.
Yeah.
So yeah. That's why I was just like, I guess this is a biopic, and I was like, oh, I was like,
you
I did get a little disappointed because I was like, oh, okay. I was like, fucking look.
Well, I kind of knew the whole time, just because the stuff in the movie, even from the beginning, roughly, it's too specific to not be about something. Like,
yeah, I just thought the movie
something.
Was going a different route.
Right,
yeah.
Right. I didn't know that, I guess, totally either. But anyway, maybe it was like a Ruby Sparks type of thing. I remember. Do you remember that movie, Ruby Sparks?
No, I don't think I do.
It's about a guy who is a writer, and he's writing a story, and then he writes like this magical fantasy version of a woman that he wants, and then it comes to life for him. It's kind of like a Weird Science part for adults. Anyway, that
doesn't sound vaguely familiar.
I thought it would go something, I don't know, weirder like that or something. Yeah. I don't know what.
Well, I was waiting for some crazy manifestations coming up, and I was waiting for something crazy to happen.
Right, yeah.
Where the Wild Thing's crazy, you know?
Yeah, maybe. You have no idea. And Gus Van Sant is not weird enough to say that, although he has done some fucking weird movies. But he can go either way. And he's done biopics before. And I guess that's always been his strength, is that he lets a lot of scenes breathe, but not in a slow way, more necessarily. Like, he lets you be comfortable with like a lot of the characters, even if they're doing bad things. Like in this case, you know, him being, he calls himself a quad, right? They call themselves quads, quadriplegic. Being a quad, you know, not understanding or pissing, the tube thing is coming out, or like with his rat pet, or mistreating his helper, or drinking himself crazy, stupid. You know, like even if they're, as he's doing all these, you know, unorthodox, you know, terrible things probably, to himself mainly, you still feel like you're like in that living room. You feel like as dirty as that living room is.
You really do.
It's like you're not really paying attention. Even if you had known it's a biography going in, it doesn't feel like it is until, like you said, around the third act.
Yeah.
I don't know how it works out, but it really works out. And I can't – it must be a Gus Van Sant touch thing because he is – he does have a style, but his style is so – it's so subtle and so out of the way of the movie that he just really just focuses on characters almost exclusively to the extent of like he doesn't care that the picture looks like super HD. He cares more about what they're doing with the scene.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I'm saying? But it's not like one of those comedies either, because this is also portrayed like a comedy. It isn't one of those comedies either that are like what do you call it when people with comedians and movies, they riff. There's a name for it. Forgetting it. They riff on scene. You know, they make up jokes, but it's like they make 50 jokes and they pick the best one, and that's the shot. Improvisational, yeah. Yeah. It's not improvisational either. Mm. Like, it's scripted, for sure. Everything they're saying is on a page, but, like, he makes it feel like it's almost improvisational without it being so.
That's what I'm saying. That's, yeah. I think a lot of those roles hugely depends on the fact that it's Joaquin Phoenix.
And I was really surprised by Jonah Hill.
Yeah. Really surprised.
You like him in this movie?
I thought it was weird.
Yeah.
I didn't know what to expect of him, especially with his hair. I think it was the hair that...
Dude, the hair. No, I mean, the hair, his mannerisms, where he lived, comparison to his mannerisms.
Yeah. There's this one scene. It's very, very... Basically, the end of the movie, mm-hmm. when he's talking about himself and how his upbringing.
He finally,
Yeah, he kind of tells, you know, he finally does say stuff, right? I don't want to ruin it. I don't want to go.
Yeah, we'll get there.
But it immediately explains all his mannerisms. It explains everything about him.
Yeah, in a way.
And you're just like, oh, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, that scene won me over to like the character. I always liked the performance, but I wasn't sure if I liked them.
Yeah, that's a good thing because he felt cultish, and he felt like he was trying to sell me something. And he was.
Oh, he felt like asshole nice. Like he's a nice asshole.
Yeah, that's
which isn't like necessarily a winnable thing. For me.
Yeah, but that's me. So I, you know,
well, that's me too.
Yeah,
maybe that's why we don't like it in movies. Anyway,
we see it right away. We're like, I know what you're doing.
It's a mirror right there. Right. Yeah, maybe. I liked him. Rooney Mara almost didn't look like Rooney Mara for a while there.
Yeah, I kept looking at her and I was like, who the fuck is this actress?
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know, I've seen her, but I don't know who she is.
She looked like, it's funny because I know Rooney Mara also played the girl in the Dragon Tattoo, the American woman. She looked like the original girl in the Dragon Tattoo. What's her name? I'm forgetting her name. But she kind of looked like her because she plays off Scandinavian.
Yeah.
I'm like, she's like the queen of that area of actresses.
Fucking flies for us, yes.
I'm saying, you know, I don't know, do you know that? Oh, yeah, that's right, you would know that. Yeah. I'm like, what the fuck, I don't know what that says. Is that an expensive airliner? Yeah. Oh, it looks expensive.
But yeah.
I mean, she had a driver at some point. I'm like, what the hell is she doing?
Yeah.
Anyway, interesting movie. Let's talk about a bit more of the performances and how else do you like how the movie treated this man's life? Do we think it treated it fairly?
What's fair? I mean,
well, what is fair exactly? So, like, for example,
I think the movie did a good job of treating the subject matter. I think it gave it importance. And it showed how he needed. I know it was a good. There was a good thing in the movie. I'm pretty sure this was in the movie. Unless if I'm mistaken about something else, where he's like, "I have to hit rock bottom to then I know I'm gonna hit rock bottom, and then I get out of it, then just to hit it again or something like that."
Yeah,
that was in the movie, right?
Yes.
Okay.
It was a voiceover, I think.
Yeah. And that's a very the movie kind of shows you that multiple times.
Yeah.
And I did like that about the movie. It's shitty to watch something like that. You know, it's a weird thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like. It's like watching what's it called? Any kind of subject matter and liking a subject matter, but that's something you shouldn't like.
Yeah.
It's done well enough to appreciate it, right?
Yeah.
So I appreciate that they're willing to go into delve into someone's flaws and trying to fix themselves or change themselves, and it's hard, especially with something like alcoholism. And there is a lot of moments where you see him just fail, and I thought they kind of took the PG-13 route of it. They didn't go as far as I thought they were.
You mean like in a Born on the 4th of July kind of way?
Like Born on the 4th of July is a rated R. Born on the
4th of July is a rated
R. Right.
Talking about his penis not working.
Right, exactly. Okay. 100%, right?
Yeah.
This is the PG-13 version of this.
Okay.
Right. And I don't know which one I wanted. I want something in between there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily want the full blown out, Tom Cruise telling me, like you said, his penis isn't working.
I mean, babies to kill.
Sure. Right, exactly. Yeah. But I also don't want, I feel like we were moments away from getting that, and then we would cut a scene and the scene would end, or the scene would take a different route.
Would you say that would left you unsatisfied?
I think it did. I think it did leave me sometimes unsatisfied. Right. Right. Not every time.
No, I understand.
But, I don't know. I want, this is funny because I want realism.
Mm-hmm.
In the movie, but I don't know how much I like dramatizations, and I like changes to whatever you need to make.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like they almost toned it down. That or his life really didn't go that well, like that. So maybe they didn't tone it down, and they were as true to the character.
Right.
But it's weird because you expect something, and I guess my expectations of it is what's skewing my vision of it, or
well, also, I mean, it's amazing how much we bring our own biases when you think of a term like rock bottom. Our version of rock bottom is very different than this man's rock bottom.
100% agree.
Right? Like him, like for example, the question about, I'm not saying he never needed money, but money was never a subject matter of this movie.
No.
He had assisted living by the government, I think, because of his quadriplegic, the accident.
Yeah, no, they pay for everything.
Yeah, I don't know if it was everything, but it seemed like that. The point is that the movie didn't focus
on
that.
Well, they pay for everything to a certain extent, of course.
Right.
He has to shop, like, super frugal, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But it's not like he eats anyway. All he did was drink.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Just be realistic.
Yeah, but an alcoholic's life is expensive, too.
Can be. You're 100% correct.
So, it's and the movie chooses to, I think, very very great decision by Van Sant and editors too, and the writer probably, to like start the movie with basically three openings in a way. He's telling his story in three different times. One of them is in front of a large audience, as you're assuming for his cartoonism.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's an interesting
his cartoonism.
Right.
That's not a word. And then went to a bunch of kids that like helped them up from tripping on the side of the street.
Which is my favorite one.
My favorite one is clearly, that's such a Van Sant scenes. Oh my God. I could point to like five others.
Right. In
his movies.
I was like, oh, none of them are on a bike. They're all skateboarding.
All the time.
Right, of course.
Jesus,
yeah.
I know. It's like Paranoid Park or it's like, it's a bunch of things. Anyway, he loves that shit. And then the third one is, well, isn't it to...
It's to his AA.
AA people, right, yeah. Right. I was thinking.
You're like, who's the third?
Yeah, no, I know it was the third. And the movie chooses to get in more detail the more personal those scenes are. For example, when he's talking to the bigger audiences, he's generalizing in his life. He's talking about the broader strokes of it.
Yeah, there's this one thing that he feels like he's rehearsed his whole life.
Yes.
And it feels like he's perfected it on stage.
Yeah.
Like that's the final
two
product.
Mistakes, and then the third one is
the three mistakes, and then I guess it was the fourth.
Right, the
I
fourth.
I guess it was the fourth thing that we have, that, yeah.
That my mother didn't want me or something.
Exactly, yeah.
You see him basically make that up the first time and then kind of rehearse it through life, but not on purpose, on purpose. Anyway. And then when he's talking to the kids, he's trying to be inspiring in a way, in a small way. And he's trying to, like, partly show off a little bit, but probably not. Probably trying to be like, I'm the adult here kind of thing. And then when he's talking to his AA, he's much more, he's talking about his fears. He's talking about what makes him a bad person, too. Like, what makes, not a bad person, what brings out his bad tendencies, which is mocking others, mocking himself to mock others.
But I think it's also he's trying to project who he wants to people to see him.
Right, and he's also
that's a big one.
Also, the AA meetings, which are like clearly, I think my favorite scenes. They didn't start off as my favorite scenes, but they became my favorite scenes.
No, they were hard to watch.
The first one, especially when the core group. I mean, not the first major one.
No, yeah. They don't even show you anything else after that.
Right.
He only goes to the core group. He goes to the major one once, and
right.
That's it.
Yeah, he gets a sponsor. Jonah Hill is a sponsor. Oh, by the way, Jonah Hill can be my sponsor anytime. I just love that guy. But at the end of the movie. Anyway. Yeah, well, he's in there, and he is. He really lets it. He's trying to excuse his behavior in front of them a bunch of the times. And again, because of this core group and how they are with their language, their brusque nature, to say it the least, the most subtle way I can possibly say, they force it out of him to own up to his shit. And among other things, too. And the great thing about this movie also is that it shows how complicated humans are. This guy is not a good guy and not a bad guy. He's an overall good guy. And we see a lot of bad things in them, but they show the complicated nature of all human beings, really. Because the wake-up call should have been when him and Jack Black crashed that car.
Yeah, it's not.
But it's not.
And that's crazy.
And it's every fucking day
he
working.
He gives himself the I wasn't driving.
Yeah, even and when he meets the supposed maybe love of his life, quote-unquote, that they never say it that way. The movie's not mushy about it, but he meets someone that he's really interested in. Yeah. And they even have that conversation with that one worker who's telling him, like, my job is not to tell you what to do. It's just to tell you how you can get hard and how you can get someone hard or wet or off, you know. Like, that's my only job, is to show you how your new sex life is going to be like. And I never seen that before. And you think all these things are going to be the lighting force to get him to stop drinking. And it's not that. And, you know, Jonah Hill in his stories tell him that, in his tales, I mean, about the other people, that, no, it's every day. It's every fucking day. Your poor you shit is not going to do anything and all this. I just find that really tactile. Like, it's really easy to follow through and, you know, I liked it. It just felt very real to me. While it was being funny, too, sometimes.
Yeah, it did feel real.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
The funny part is that he's a funny guy. And he has a dark sense of humor.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the people around them have a dark sense of humor as well, for the reasons of, you know, most of those friends are, or the people he surrounds himself with, alcoholism, you know.
Yeah, I mean, people who like what he calls that fat cow. I don't remember her name. The one that was next to him a lot. When she's telling him her story.
What's that?
I remember when he called her that. I'm like, damn, bro.
He went. He's like,
yeah,
whoa,
like, dude.
Yeah, that was fast.
Anyway, and she retorts with
Reba. Yeah.
Her fucking, like, dude, I got cancer. What are you talking about? Like, like, to her, that's why they can joke that way. That's why his style of humor really works on people that are not really, that have been through all that, in a way. It's almost like, I don't know. I can't describe it, but you know what I mean. And it's very brusque, of course, and it's childish, but also adult.
Yeah.
It's like raunchy, right? I liked it. It's funny because it's almost like the movie prefers his life than his cartoons.
Right.
So I'm curious, what do you think about Joe Callahan's life's work, interested Gus Van Sant in making a biopic about him?
I don't know. Okay, do you want my honest opinion?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
What, he lost a bet?
No. I think it's this artistic, wanting to represent somebody artistic. And it's like this, I think it's one of the first kind of people who was pushing something different from the, it was like one of those first people that came out, that kind of made it big everywhere, but was shut down by everybody. He ended up becoming big, even though no one gave him a shot, like, until somebody gave him a shot.
Yeah.
It was one of those, and it's somebody from Portland, Oregon, kind of like starting, not a hipster movement necessarily starting,
yeah,
but starting something from that, you know?
Okay.
I think it's, I probably want it, I would say, just like respected the guy.
Yeah, because, I mean,
respected the work, at least.
The movie does put some time in for his cartoons and why he comes up with it. Like, someone will give him a line and that line will be in one of his cartoons.
Yeah.
As a punchline.
Right, yeah.
For example. And I think people's reactions to his cartoons that we knew, like his AA people or his friends or that girlfriend of his or the guy who was helping him, I think their reactions made the cartoons feel better because they were personal to me at that time because I knew them already as characters. Not that I care how many readers like this stuff or how much hate mail he got. Although I love how that old lady stopped in the street, like, your shit is terrible, you should be fired or whatever. That was really funny.
That's right.
Maybe you're right. Maybe, and then Gus Van Sant decided to just focus on the man itself completely, almost, or 90% of it, and not really focus on what his work meant to others, just what he meant to himself, maybe. Maybe that was his shtick, because I think it clearly focuses in that direction.
It does, yeah, but I think picking the subject matter until you figure out that.
Yeah.
I think it's something you have to definitely envelop yourself in. It's weird when you pick a subject matter.
But the movie is almost except for maybe one crucial scene, which we kind of touched on, the Jonah Hill final scene, right, when he has that conversation. Other than that, the movie is basically unspoilable, because the movie opens with his adoration.
Yeah.
You never know. You never well, not know where his cartoon really work is going
to
lead.
If you pay attention to the movie does a really good job. And like I said, this is all relies on Joaquin Phoenix's performance.
Yeah.
And I hate to keep bringing it up, but it really does. He's in 90% of the movie, 99, if anything.
Yeah.
He does it a lot. If you notice that.
Yeah.
He likes to, maybe he's just a showboat. By the way, here you go. If you want to read some proverbs.
Lao Tse.
Yeah, Lao Tse. What's it called? From the movie.
Yeah, no, I remember.
You see the difference, and if you pay attention, you see the difference from when he's, especially that rehearsed line about how, remember we talked about how he says, you know, like three things about my mother and
forth.
He says them very differently every time.
Yeah.
And then you notice I noticed it, how different he says it when he says it to the guy at the church he's trying to figure out.
Mm-hmm.
He says it to him, and he was very hesitant, and he said it like very like warily in comparison to when he sees it on stage. He says it on stage like he has a carefree attitude about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's let go anything of it, right?
Yeah.
When he says it to the people in the AA meeting, he says it to them as in like, this is the reason, as an excuse of why, right?
Yeah, kind of like a badge of dishonor.
Kind of like a badge of dishonor, right, exactly. And it's all different ways he says it. Even though he's saying the same thing, he says it in different ways. And you can tell from the way he's saying things that you're getting different meanings of it. And that's the big thing, because, you know, we're showing from the movie when he starts finally changing his ways, I guess.
Yeah, and that's why even though the movie feels, like I said, improvisational, it's not, because of the carefully worded dialogue scripted, of course. Makes sense that it was written that way. It says that way.
Right.
It really speaks. Phoenix is so good. He just makes it look so effortless.
He really does, and I feel like he puts so much effort into it. Like,
right, when you see behind the scenes anything or someone describe his work ethic, it's like, dude, he works a lot. But like, we see the finished product, it looks like easy. It almost looks like cake. Obviously he had to learn how to do the wheelchair and write like the way he had to write because his hands didn't work as well. But yeah, what did you think of the mother thing? You know, like the core, not the reason for everything, but the something that started it off, right? So,
well, I think it's that spark, right? It's that little thing.
Right. Spark.
It's that little thing that dug at him, and then he would let that pebble snowball. So as it kept rolling, it kept dragging more shit on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he would like, well, I already have a reason. Why not add another reason to it? Why not add another this to it? Why mm-hmm. not another, you know? And then eventually you have like 300 different things that are on top of it. And then it all started because you let one thing get at you, you know, like drive your reasoning to do everything already. I see that happen. I mean, I've seen that's happened to me before really easily.
Yeah.
Obviously for sure. Not as crazy as, you know, my mother leaving me.
Different results.
Yeah. Right. But yeah, I thought it was, it felt normal. It didn't feel abnormal. It didn't feel, you know, it didn't feel forced.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that when I first heard him say it, I was just like, that sounds rehearsed. And it's funny because he says it the whole movie. And I was like, oh, okay, because you've been saying that your whole life. And I was like, that's why it sounds rehearsed.
Nothing in this movie feels forced. It's crazy.
Right. But like I said,
No, you're right, though. That's because of his
closest
character.
The first time he says it, that was the closest time I've ever felt like it was being forced.
Yeah.
But the reality just feels rehearsed. Like, it feels like he said it so many times, he's just saying it to say it at this point.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, he says it to that guy when he's trying to find out his mother's real name.
Yeah.
Remember? And it was like a closed file or whatever.
Right, that's the church guy.
The church guy, yeah. Anyway, yeah, that was exactly. So the movie feels probably the most biopic to you is when they montage to him being successful with the cartoons, right?
Yeah.
And they're separating the pages to what's funny, what to show his girlfriend, which is clearly the pile he likes the most.
Yeah.
A very nice little touch. Yeah, that part's really cool. Like, again, that's, and it's not even a spoiler. We're not going to have a spoiler session. It's like, not only because it's real life, but because the movie's unspoilable. Like, the movie begins with the ending, and is very open about where his life has gone. It's just, you're going to see the machinations of a man who overcame alcoholism, who overcame his creative rut, had he won at all. How he used that to better his life from being a quadriplegic. All these three things are the movie's primary goal, and it shows the success in the first scene.
Right.
You're just seeing how he succeeds in that and how it's toil, daily work, hard as shit, ups and downs. You know, him testing that poor helper of his, that hippie-looking guy, constantly.
That's right.
The first thing we get with him, he's yelling at him, like, I've been waiting for hours, and he's just bitching at him, he's just ignoring him, clearly a sign that he does this all the time. Right? And he's just ignoring him. Like, do you want some of these cookies? You know, are you gonna eat some of that? Anyway, I think it's a pretty good movie. I liked it. Gus Van Sant is such a weird guy. I half his movies, I never know they're released until like a year later or something.
100%. Yeah, later. It's really weird. You're like, there's like no press or no.
And the other half are like Milk and Google Hunting. I'm like, okay, those I know. But like some of his movies, they just come and go. I'm like, what the? There's a new Van Sant movie? I don't know about.
Right.
So again, thank you, Luke. I'm going to end this thing by reading this randomly from a page in this Tao Te Ching.
It's all the proverbs, basically.
Yeah, okay.
Of Lao Tzu.
Right, which is a major character that they took reference to in the movie. Those who possessed in highest degree the attributes of the Tao did not seek to show them, and therefore they possessed them in fullest measure. Possessed in a lower degree those attributes, not to lose them, and therefore they did not possess them in fullest measure. I just read the first thing I saw. Probably not the best thing.
No,
it's
not.
This is in a movie where, like, I'm actually scripted to where find the best one here.
Yeah.
Right? That's not how movies work. A random page really is just a fucking random page here.
Yeah.
Men come forth and live, they enter again and die. Wow. Okay, I'm gonna stop reading that. Anyway, that is it for our review for Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot. By the way, funny, dark title. Because
really,
he's a quad.
So, the name of this movie, I thought there was like a robbery or something.
Right, like, yeah, that was like a robbery spoof.
Right, that's what I thought too. And I was like, what, he's got a chair? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, this is cruel. That's just a cruel title. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll review our last film of the evening, which is part of our marathon, a Steven Spielberg film called Empire of the Sun. So, stick around.
A desperate time. A world at war. A boy alone.
An aristocratic British youth is separated from his family at the start of World War II after the Japanese army invades British-controlled areas of China. Reduced to living on the streets and fighting for food, the youth is eventually interned in a Japanese POW camp for British civilians. Here, admiration quickly develops both for captured American pilots and the Japanese themselves. When the war ends, the boy, torn from everything he knew, attempts to again find his parents. Wow, they added that last sentence there. All right, this is Empire of the Sun. Sans Luke, of course. This is his pick, as we said earlier. He is not available because he's doing relief stuff. War called, essentially. So, Raf, you've seen this before, I believe?
I have not, actually.
Oh, it's your first time.
See, this is the best thing about this. I love marathon picks because I always get to watch, because usually a movie that Luke hasn't seen, or by some random chance of faith, he has seen it, like, recently. Mm-hmm. It happens to come across where, like, oh, hey, we're reviewing this movie. Yeah. Oh, this is great. I haven't seen it. And I get to pick my picks that I haven't seen, which I know he hasn't seen, because usually I see more movies than he does.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, this is pretty cool for me. I get to watch movies that I haven't seen before.
Yeah, well, that's good.
But I've never seen it, except for the very end of this movie. I've totally seen that ending.
You've seen the ending, oh, like, randomly? Like,
yeah,
on TV
randomly
or something?
On TV, yeah.
Or...
And I was like, huh, that looks like Christian Bale.
Yeah. Christian Bale looked like himself a lot for most of his life. Isn't that weird how that works on humans?
Yeah, because you could look at me and you're like, you do not.
So I need to get a perusal because I just thought of this now. But let me see, of Steven Spielberg here is that I wonder, because I know this is not the first, you know, foray into World War II or war in general, right?
Before this?
Well, that's what I'm trying to say. If this was his first, before, right?
It might be his. Schindler's List come up before this? No, that came out.
No, Schindler's List came out after,
for
90s, sure.
Right, like 93 or something.
And I know that was his big one, but he still could have like touched on it. Let me see. Oh no, he did 1941, which I have not seen. It's funny. It's a comedy about people preparing for the Japanese invasion after the Pearl Harbor thing. So he did a comedy, a war comedy type thing. And then after that, you know, well, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom already come out, and the Nazis of the...
It does take place in war times.
Stuff, but it isn't
exactly
the same.
Yeah.
Quite. So, yeah, Empire of the Sun is its first serious, I guess, we'll call.
And it's not even really about... There is war aspects of the movie, but it's mainly about, I would say, the...
It's like the bridge in the River Kwai, right? It's like...
Yeah.
It is about the war, but it's really just about this bridge.
You kind of... Yeah, exactly.
And about these prisoners.
You kind of forget that. Oh, there's a war going on, right? But they're so focused on this one thing.
Or Hogan's Heroes or something. I mean, you're not missing much. It's of its own time. Anyway... Yeah, and then Schindler's List, and of course, Saving Private Ryan is top two, easy. All right, cool.
Yeah, when you think of...
Yeah, what?
No, I say when you, it's interesting, because when you think of Spielberg, I think you have to say, when you think of Spielberg, you have to say Spielberg War, you immediately go Saving Private Ryan and Schindler's List.
Yeah, exactly.
I think a lot of people forget that he did Schindler's List, though.
Well, you think so? Like people around your
circles? I think a lot of people my age or younger forget about
it. Oh, for sure.
I just think Saving Private Ryan is more visually pleasing. It's like saying out of the Miyazaki movies or the Studio Ghibli movies, I want to watch Grave of the Fireflies is my favorite movie. And you're like, really? Is it though? Like, is it?
I mean, how can it be your favorite movie?
Right.
It's so depressing.
Exactly. Right. So you don't say, you know, you probably say like, oh no, Spirited Away is my favorite movie.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, oh yeah, but they also made Grave of the Fireflies, and you're like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
Like you know it, right?
Right.
You've seen it.
Yeah, yeah.
You just like, it's one of those movies where like. Yeah, it was good, but I don't want to cry.
Yeah, do you ever feel when people tell you, we're going off topic, but do you ever feel when people tell you that their favorite movie is like some like very serious epic thing, and you're like, that's the movie that makes you happy? Like that's
yeah, that's what's funny because
not Back to the Future.
So I find that funny because a lot of right. So people, that's my default. My default is when people are like, "What's your favorite movie?" I'm like, "What are we talking about here?" Like. Give me a criteria, please.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Like, help me help you here, right? So it's Jerry Maguire. But so I tell people all the time because I'm like, I don't have a favorite movie. Like, I have a favorite movie right now. What is it? Fuck it. Let's say this, right?
Yeah.
There you go. I just came up with it because that's how I feel today.
Yeah.
You know, but in reality, like, it's a feel-good movie. What's my favorite movie to watch to feel good? Yeah, I would say Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of my favorite movies to watch. It's not the favorite movie, but it's probably up there.
Groundhog Day, Midnight Run. Those are on the top for me, too.
Right? Yeah. So I tell that to people all the time, right? So I say, what's that movie that you want to feel depressed but kind of good about the world? Maybe Schindler's List would be there, you know? Like,
maybe.
Right? And I'm saying, but you don't think about that movie. Like, I don't want to rewatch that movie. Like, you know it's a good movie and you know what it did. Mm-hmm. But you're like, it's a subject. It's like a taboo subject you don't want to watch again.
Yeah. Like, great. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Great. It's like that. I admire it, like, to all the hell.
Right.
But, like...
It's not a movie I'm watching.
Can't just sit down and watch.
It's not like, you know what? I feel like watching Schindler's List today. You know, just to make sure my mood is the same I want to feel.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I usually say Amelie, actually. That's a feel-good movie for me. Anyway. All right. Now back on this movie here. Steven Spielberg's... now, he's been famous at this point. By this time, as I mentioned earlier, he had already done... Not only the movies we talked about already, like Duel and Twilight Zone, but he's done the I think The Color Purple already come out, I think, and
yeah, definitely came out.
And Hook is around the corner. He hasn't made it yet, but I know that was a huge movie for a lot of people in that age. And two Indiana Jones had come out. One was a flop. One wasn't. It's Jaws, obviously, and all the fucking Close Encounters. And forget about it. This guy was already a legend in many ways. He was already a stable name. He's a household name by the time this movie comes out. So, what did you think?
So first viewing, I thought Christian Bale still looks the same, and now I know why he always wanted to be so skinny in all of his other roles. He's always hungry. Yeah,
yeah.
Machinist.
Machinist.
I like the movie. It's one of those rare movies, especially from the 80s, where we like a child actor. And just so you know, it's just Christian Bale's a good actor in general.
Mm-hmm.
Even in childhood. Like, so there's very few of those people, you know, that were really good child actors.
Hmm.
And obviously those people, I think, became really big actors. In comparison to now, I think now we have
Anna Paquin also. right?
Yeah.
She was just in the piano.
I think we liked also, what's her name? That
was that her? Timothy Hutton was an 80s boy. Although he wasn't a boy, he was a teenager.
Yeah. So what was the other, no, that, one, with that one famous actress? who, no, she's Charlie's Angels.
she's
in the Charlie's Angels movie, the remake.
Oh, okay. Is it Lucy Liu?
Barrymore.
Huh?
Drew Barrymore.
Drew Barrymore. Right. Hugh, E.T.
Exactly. Right. Perfect. Of course. Steven Spielberg.
Way and Firestarter and all that.
Exactly. Yeah. Firestarter. That's the movie I was talking about. Firestarter. Yeah, okay. That's the way I felt.
And then she had like a half decade off.
Yeah. Let me get back into this movie.
Yes.
So good child actors is what I was trying to get at.
Mm-hmm.
The movie's good. It's one of those subjects, like you said, you don't want to necessarily see or anything. But it's interesting because I never knew that that's something that happened. Like, I never knew this happened during this time. Like, I knew they had...
About the Japanese taking over China areas?
No, I knew that. I knew, okay. Don't get me, but I didn't know about the prisoners of war.
Oh, okay.
For this. Like
the specific kind?
Like the specific one, like, okay. You know? And it's interesting, like, it's like an interesting story that no one is being told, and it's good that it's being told, because, like, you wouldn't know otherwise, because where in the history books are you writing this?
Well, you're describing why most people make movies about World War II in general.
But that's what this because movie fits
no one thought of this angle, you know, think right, of the when I get, and boy I, in the strike
and
the
I And I 100% agree with you. That's why those movies work for people, because you're like...
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And that's what this movie still
Oh, I wasn't
for.
Knocking it.
That's why this movie works for me, though. That's what I was trying to get at. So this movie works for me for that reason, because it's a subject matter that I didn't know about that happened during a war that... Obviously, so much craziness happened during this war because we have like 3 billion movies about World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just so much that happened to it that to get like even a grasp of a single thing, we have to dedicate it just a movie. And that's just to get a grasp of something that happened of one person's life, if at that.
Right, if.
Right. So, because I don't know how much. I mean, some of it was obviously probably dramatized.
Yeah, same most of it.
Yeah. So, you know, so it goes with that. Other than that, there's some really good acting here, even for Malkovich.
Oh, yeah, Malkovich is pretty sleazy.
Yeah, yeah. So there's some really good acting here. And that's...
Forgot Joe Pantzl's in the movie,
Totally forgot. Yeah, he plays, like, such a weak character.
Dude, he...
such a weak role.
I know that... I mean, to me, he's always looked, like, old and tired.
Old, tired, like...
But he's been looking that way for 20, 30 years. So he's really not aging.
It looks like he's always had, like... Always had a newborn in his life, and he's like, I just don't get sleep, man.
It's like his life is a PTSD filled.
Yeah, it could be
dreamscape.
So that being said, I really enjoyed the movie. The acting does a lot of greatness in this movie. I think what Steven Spielberg's touch in this movie is a lot in the beginning of what his sense of wonderment, and it's all with to do with Jim, our character in the movie, James, right? Technically,
yeah.
So it's he has a sense of wonderment, like he's a kid, and he portrays him so beautifully in the beginning of the movie as a kid,
yeah,
and throughout the movie also, and that's those little flares up throughout the movie that we get. I think is what makes like gives that touch, that finesse of Steven Spielberg that we've grown to love.
Mm-hmm.
What like the kind of like cements this movie being a really fucking good movie.
Okay.
Or at least a really memorable Steven Spielberg movie for me.
Right, Dana. Yeah. So get it. Yeah, I got you. I think it was nominated for a few things, too. I'm not sure if it won anything.
I'll look it up.
I guess my turn is that it's my second time viewing it. I saw it, I don't remember, a long time ago. I have the DVD of it. And
maybe nominated for 6 Oscars.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. Was it Bale, too? Is that what got him going?
Cinematography, direction, set decoration.
Cinematography, I understand. It was beautiful.
Costume, sound, sure. Editing, and score.
Okay, wow. Quite a lot there. Yeah, that's, I guess I can see some of those. No, I didn't. I know I didn't win anything. Anyway, that's really cool. Anyway, but yeah, so I enjoyed this movie overall. I don't, like, the second viewing didn't, like, make me like it more. And I forgot most of the details in my years between the last showing. And I think the performances, especially of Bale, is pretty good. I don't know what he gets out of him, but whatever he did to get it out of it now, he did a good job for Bale. And I think I wonder, like, if... I don't know if you know the story. When Spielberg had said that when he, as a post thing, after he made Close Encounters... He didn't have children when he made that movie. He had now he's had a couple, way more than a couple kids, I think, or maybe more. And when he got them, he said in an interview a long time ago, I don't remember when, that had he done that movie with kids, he would have done a lot of things differently in that movie, especially referring to the dad leaving the family, if you remember that movie.
I do.
I think, don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure he's had kids by the time he's making Empire of the Sun because of his adoration to showing this wonderment, much like how we felt during the Twilight Zone old people thing.
Yeah.
This sense of also children involved, even those old people. Mm-hmm. This like gleefulness of innocence that right. he's trying to portray. And I think had Steven Spielberg without children made this movie, we would have gotten something more brusque for sure, but I think we would have gotten something a little more daring because at this time he is competing with some great POW war camp stories, movies, and I'm not saying he doesn't touch on them, I'm not saying he has to compete with them. I'm saying that those movies seem to bring out a humanity, like a sense of like a human mankind type of philosophical thinking questions.
I do agree with you.
That
yeah.
Empire of the Sun doesn't seem to even want to touch on, which no. I don't blame it for.
No, right.
But I feel like the movie's just, like the first half, which the first 30 to 40 minutes, because it takes a while for him to get into the camp,
yeah.
It's maybe too long, and it seems it meanders to show this kid and making us feel for him. And I think he tries a little too hard.
Yeah, so I would 100% agree with you there,
yeah.
Where the movie does rely mostly, if not all of it, on us, the audience, falling for the fact that Jim is, what's it called, is a kid who went from wonderment and being broken down to what he gets broken down to at the mm-hmm. end.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, like the whole things that happened to him, and that big disparity in comparison to when he was this snobby little rich kid. But he also yeah. had a sense of wonderment. Like you can't knock him for living a life. You know, that was the life he was born into.
Right. He was into models and planes.
Right. Exactly. Show, you know. And then you get to where you are, and you're like, you cannot help feel for the kid. That's the movie does completely 100% agree with you.
Yeah.
Do that, and without doing that, I think the movie has little legs to stand on.
I think there's an age of movies
of,
right now
of how impactful it should be.
Yeah, and also I think we're in the middle, maybe towards the end. I don't know. We're in an age of films where we want things to be more feeling more realistically, not look realistically, although that too, but feel things that feel more realistically. For example, like if this movie was made today, not by Spielberg, but just anyone, right? It would show a more, it would focus more on the realistic depiction of this kid being, you know, thrown into an adult situation that his child mind cannot handle, and then some sort of breakdown that would have been heartbroken, and the amount of feelings we would get would be stronger, but more negative. I think this movie kind of belongs in the 80s, you know what I'm saying? For that reason. I'm not saying that makes it what people call it, it's not dating. It's not dated exactly, but we're in a different wave of movies right now.
Well, it's just what the audience demands now.
Right. And I think we're swinging back around though. And with that in mind, it was hard for me to detach myself a little bit throughout the movie on this second rewatch. I don't remember how I felt the first time. Mm-hmm. I just remember feeling it was a good movie. You know. Also, I didn't have to review it. So let's see. But yeah, I think the main thing to catch from this movie is the cinematography, which I think is beautiful. Mm-hmm. Has some great shots in it.
They do.
You always want more.
Especially
sometimes.
With the airplane stuff.
Yeah, with the airplane stuff. Especially when you see all the pilots like... Mm-hmm. Taking their shots, right, and then saying their goodbyes,
little things,
because they know they're not coming back. That's when they were sending out their suicide pilots, right, kamikazes,
yeah,
and stuff like that. There were at some point the camp turns and they're camped by an airfield. Mm-hmm. And anyway, most of the movie's there. And the John Malkovich thing was interesting because the whole time he's like a foil that's waiting to happen. He is going to corrupt this boy. Right, he by his ways and the fact that you know Jim wants to please him so much.
Yeah.
At first, because he was starving, and he milks it.
You almost think of like Nightingale syndrome.
A little bit, yes. You think of it that way. He wants to be his little assistant, and when we get to the camp life, and they do some time skipping, and you know how he has this little boy has a camp under his thumb in a way, and in a way he doesn't, but in a way he does. Like he understands where everything is. He does his absolute best to not like stop. You know, the movie does ask that question. For example, like, I think one of the characters off base or whatever says, like, you know, that kid doesn't stop. You know, it doesn't stop to think. Doesn't stop. You know, implying that if he stops, then he'll start remembering all the sad things that happen, right? Like, yeah, separation of his parents, whatever, whatever. And the movie just says that, but doesn't really go into it. And I always wanted more out of that. But even despite that disappointment, the kid is like, you're worried about his innocence.
100%, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably the power of this movie, probably. It's just that you worry about his innocence being taken by John Malkovich, taken by the war, maybe being ultimately betrayed by this Japanese kid who kind of like, not befriends him, but they're friendly, right? This young adult kid.
Yeah.
Who's like helping the pilots out or whatever?
Who ends it? Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, should we get into spoilers or?
We can.
Yeah, let's just do it because I'm about to. I was almost spoiled.
Yeah, I know.
So, if you haven't seen it, it is a recommendation, not a super recommendation because of my quibbles on the way the movie is approached. But it's not a bad movie. It's definitely, you know. You can't hate this movie, really. It's kind of hard to hate it. Also, it's kind of like,
yeah, that's
stamped with the approval of history.
Right, so, exactly.
Kind of hard to walk around that eggshells. But anyways, spoilers for Empire of the Sun starting right now. Okay, so obviously there's a few things, especially at the third act, where like this kid has to break down, and it kind of like forces him to break down. One is the what I imagine to be a mixed feeling about the war about to end, and him worrying about that, him worrying about.
This is his life that he's
this
made.
Is his life, yeah. Right. He understands how this camp works. Why would he take a chance on something he doesn't understand?
Yeah.
And also,
and that's actually a big thing with the, in general, how the crowd or how the prisoners feel also.
Mm-hmm.
That's how everybody feels that's running away, that's being moved away with the Japanese army.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. They don't know how else to live right now. They've lived in this ecosystem that they rather trust their chances with, instead of getting saved or waiting for something.
Kind of like the devil you know.
Yeah, it's kind of like the devil you know. It's just like, even though I get next to nothing, I'm still getting something. And I know how to live in this, and I'd rather not risk, you know?
Well, I thought that more of the adults feared, execution. I thought that's what they were fearing.
I think that's...
ending means, like, right before they come rescue, you're going to shoot all of you.
But I think at the end, also, it was more like...
Yeah, I guess not.
They had a chance.
I guess so, yeah. I mean, I don't know the rules of engagement back then. Still don't know them today. But I think we expect worse form criminal or warmongers today, or our villains, right? But yeah, there's that fear, and also the fear of the war coming to an end, meaning for John Malkovich's character, what he said to the boy, where about, like, is he going to take him with him, right? Is he going to be worthy to take him? And, you know, John Malkovich's character, we should probably find out, right? I mean, I don't want to say his entire name.
Baisley.
Beasley?
Baisley.
Baisley, thank you. Baisley milks his kid for all he's worth. Takes up a lot of his time, his energy, his wit, you know, the ability, what he can do as a kid.
Basie, my apologies.
Basie. And throughout this whole movie, and you expect the corruption coming, and there are moments where you even kind of forget it, and then until it comes back, you know, the boy comes back to him, like, yeah, I got this for you, and like, oh, shit, he's still adoring him. And the doctor tries to help, but he, you know, I guess doesn't do enough. And,
Yeah.
And so you worried about that, and then the real time for me where I felt the most, it's not the very ending necessarily. It's not when he leaves Basie necessarily. It's when Basie's friend shoots that the Japanese kid. You know, that because all he did was they were just hanging out, right? They were, well, he threw an apple at him or something. It wasn't nothing violent, and I guess a kid was supposed to fly up there, but he was grounded for war reasons.
Yeah, I know the airplane wouldn't turn on.
Oh, the airplane wouldn't turn on. That's right. That's right. My bad. I knew it was some other reason. I'm like, what was it? Yeah, it didn't work. It's probably shoddy. It's probably like a second-use plane and whatever.
I mean, it was. They're using it from spare parts and trying to fix it.
Yeah. I almost wish we got like some more maybe equal screen time to with the kid, knowing like growing up with the mentality of honoring this code and honoring your country in the way that they did. That's different from us. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the reasons I love the Clint Eastwood's double feature of Flags of Our Fathers, not so much, but Letters from Iwo Jima, is that shows exactly both sides equally on the same battlefield in two movies. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying do that, but I'm saying something like that. That would have been interesting for me because I wanted to know more about the kid that he was so bummed out that he couldn't kill himself for his empire, yeah. For the empire he belongs to. And I thought that was fascinating. And it ended way too quickly, as kind of death happens. And the kid just breaks down. And his reaction to Basie was realistic to you, you think?
As in, like, he stops wanting to be him?
Or wanting to please him?
Or wanting to please him?
Yeah. Or was it really the betrayal of him not taking him with him when he said he would?
It was a mix of both things.
Maybe.
I think it was a mix of both things, and I think it was a quick thing. It was a realistic reaction, and I think it was a very adult realization on Jim's part, or on what's it called?
Yeah,
Jim. That's his name in the movie because he changes his name to Jim. Because he was James or whatever.
Yeah, he was James, Jamie, as dad calls him.
Yeah, out. Or something like that. So it's a realization of like, oh, it's I don't matter in here.
Yeah, I don't matter in this guy.
I don't matter with this guy.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's a harsh realization that, especially when he's like, because he's telling him, no, he's good. Like, you know, we're good. And they don't care to listen. And they don't care about inviting him to escape. They don't, even though he did everything before that, they don't care to. Mm-hmm. And it's that realization of, like, oh, you just never cared. You only cared about yourself.
Yeah.
And it's that quick realization of just like, oh, now I have you pegged. It's always been about you, not about anybody else.
Well, yeah. I mean, we as the audience
knew that right away, but him as a kid, he's been being taken advantage of.
Yeah, that was an interesting thing because, in a way, I can see the moment of it, like, because it's not just one moment that make him realize this. It's an entire movie's worth of life that made him, or the last 3 years, whatever, as long as it's been, 2 years, 1 year, of being in camp.
And it's that same moment where the other guy doesn't realize that, his other lackey, the doctor that you were bringing up.
Oh, I don't remember. Oh, the guy who shot the kid? Oh, no, you're talking about...
No,
Joe Pants?
Yeah, Joe Pants.
Okay, yeah.
He has that. You see that a couple scenes before that, where before they made their escape, right? Mm-hmm. And he goes, he's like, are they here? I know they're going to make their escape right now. He's like, no, they left us. They escaped already without telling us.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even know what to do with himself because he, like the kid, was being taken advantage of as well. The difference is one had the resolve and the other one didn't, and the kid is the one who had the resolve.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, yeah. That was ultimately about Joe, whatever his name was in the movie. He was definitely more, he'd get given up from the minute we met him almost.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
He was on his way out. He always complained when he wasn't on his way out. Like, it was like, he looked a little more Weasley about it.
It was Frank, yeah.
Yeah, Frank. We didn't get enough about him, but we didn't care. That was fine, what we got him. But anyway, all those betrayals led to this ending, which a lot of people talk about. Empire of the Suns. Probably Oscar footage that they show at the Oscars, whatever, I can only imagine is the ending where he's at this orphanage after the war, freshly out of the war, and all these parents come to these orphanages, you know, to see if they can find their kid, right? And, you know, and the only thing I can say about this is that Steven Spielberg must have had a signature brand already made by this point, and I'm sure I can find examples in previous movies.
I'm pretty sure you can.
But of really tugging those strings as much as you fucking could.
He knows how to go and be like, hey, buddy, ha! And just, you're like, oh, sweet Jesus, that hurt my heart. Like, he's really good at that.
He really strains it out. And it's funny thing, a lifetime of watching Spielberg movies, because by the time I was born, he already made like three, and he's still making them. So, like, right. I'm 34, so, like, he's still going. A lifetime of Spielberg movies, especially War Horse, has led me to, like, be desensitized by this. So, like, I saw that scene, and it felt wrong to me. It just felt like he was trying to manipulate. It didn't work for me. It probably worked for me the first time I saw it. I don't remember. But this time around, I was like, dude, why so heavy? Why so heavy? I don't need this much cream in this coffee. It's too much.
Right.
It's too heavy. Yeah. And, you know, I just wanted the kid to say fucking something also. Like, I don't know why that annoyed me. I think that the isms of Spielberg at this 2018 has led me to really question those things. And I shouldn't blame it because it's not the movie's fault. It's his style. He's really good at it. He kind of fucking started that in a way. So I don't knock the guy for it, but I've seen too many of that shit. Too much. Not to mention copycats of other directors.
It does feel hammy.
Yeah.
Is that what that's what you're trying to get to?
I guess so.
I do agree, but like
that hit you. I mean, it's your first time.
That's almost it worked for me. It did work for me. It kind of sucks that I've seen the end of this movie before already. So no. Right when I saw that scene, I was like, oh yeah, they passed him up.
I recognize
it. I saw it, and I was like, I remember because I think it was like. You want to see a young Christian Bale? I think that's what I saw, and someone showed me like a YouTube clip of this movie, like the end of it, and I was like, "Wow, he looks like Christian Bale."
Yeah, from my understanding, it's his first film.
I think it was. Yeah, I can look that up.
It was introducing kind of with a credit introducing him, I think, in the movie. The fact that I say he's tugging at the heartstrings obviously means that I didn't feel nothing. I'm just saying it was way too obvious for me, and also like in the sea of kids there. No, I mean, I know that it's the movie of his story, so he's supposed to look like the grayest, like the most different from the first shot of the movie, right? He's supposed to look sulken and skinnier than he should be and depressed or shell-shocked or whatever, right? I get that. But, like, really? He had the worst? I mean, there are fucking crazier... Those kids must have gone through the same, if not worse. Yeah. Like, they all should look that way. Yeah. As the movie's portraying him in comparative.
I agree.
To the best
I agree.
And if you're going to go on that route, I'm saying. Yeah. So I thought that was like another thing, you know, another heartstring manipulation.
I want to say it's his first non-TV movie. He did three other things before that.
Okay. Well, I mean, everyone starts somewhere. Usually a commercial. So those are my thoughts on the ending. That's very popular with this movie. We didn't see any war stuff necessarily. He's like teetering on action here because he had done a few action movies by this point. But, and I don't ever know. I'm trying to think, what has he done anything really that complicated before this movie? And cinematic action stuff. And I'm trying to think. No, he just did the color purple.
Indiana Jones.
Yeah, Indiana Jones had that crazy car chase, right, with the Nazis in the first one, when he's going from truck to truck, right, with the Ark. That was pretty cool, and that was very expansive. Obviously, you know,
Jesus,
duel is duel.
We got E.T., we got Raiders, we got Temple of Doom, Color Purple.
Is this the funny thing is that we're seeing all these movies, and you think, like, oh, this guy's kind of everywhere. I mean, he's not. He's doing just dramas and variations of drama. Yeah. But, like, at the same time, he's practicing all these different things. So when he gets to a movie like...
With Jaws.
When he gets to like Jurassic Park or even...
in the 90s, yeah.
You know, some Schindler's List for sure. Like he has the capability of showing drama, showing fucking tragedy, showing action. Like super competent, complicated action too. Because Saving Private Ryan, everyone still fucking oozes over that opening.
I mean, yeah, it's
insane. It's intense, and he did it all, and it's all practical. And it's insane, and I don't know how he did it. I mean, I know we all know how, but you still don't know how.
Yeah,
and you know, it's what he's able to expect and get from these actors by this point. As you can see, him just like practicing all this shit with these movies, and Empire of the Sun might have been a good stepping stone to get to those movies that are now more or less legendary in people's viewpoints. Anything else you want to mention or talk about Empire of the Sun specifically? A highlight of some sort or anything like that? Or low light?
Huh?
Or low light?
I'm trying to think. I think the movie does a lot of big build-ups.
Yeah.
I would say the highlight, we were talking about how the cinematography is very well done in this. And it's that scene of, yeah, that is a memorable scene also in the movie when he's, we kind of briefly mentioned there with the airplanes, when the Americans finally make it to that actual airstrip and they kind of bomb that area.
Yeah.
This is right before they're all forced to leave, you know?
Yeah.
They have this one really cool, when he goes to the rooftop.
Yeah, yeah, that was cool.
It's a really cool scene because you bring back his innocence, his child innocence. He's super still interested in the planes. That's this.
Yeah.
That's that. And that's
he's Cadillac. Calling him out. He sees the pilot.
That's the Cadillac of the sky. Mm. And you know, this is a really cool moment, especially because we've just been through disparity.
Mm-hmm.
That's one really big scene in the movie. Another really cool scene that I enjoyed, but I felt like it felt too much like we're drawing. This is the dramatization of the movie, and this is me obviously noticing things. When they get to the Colosseum and they have all of those items that they stole, that they took from all the rich people in that Colosseum.
Oh yeah,
or
yeah.
in that field or whatever.
Yeah, yes,
and they have everything right. And in the this is how you know the movie is just a little bit too much, right?
Yeah.
We're talking about building up the ammo, right?
Yeah.
In the order, if you remember the movie before, when they're trying to rob, when he first meets Basie,
yeah,
and they're trying to rob the house. No, keep me. I know all these people's houses. They have money.
Yeah,
they have a crystal chandelier. Mm-hmm. They have this over here. They have that over here. In that order, you see them.
Oh,
so you see a crystal chandelier.
I know you see the little thing. I didn't know it was in the order.
It's like basically in that order. It feels like it's in that order.
I'm sure it is. Actually.
And then you see his car. He's there, you know, in the car, and like all of these really things. And that's also a big thing. That movie, that's a very impactful movie. That I think we should have got more from that scene because it's a really impactful thing. It was like the movie could have done more for the disparity of prisoners of war in general.
Yeah.
But it obviously just focuses on the kid instead.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you could have been like, all of these items that all these rich people had, nothing. Means nothing.
Right, yeah.
It's literally nothing. Like, priceless has a different meaning for this.
Yeah.
Because it's more like worthless.
Yeah.
Because it didn't do anything for them.
No.
And, you know, that's a big thing that I think that it's a missed opportunity in the movie that could take more. And I think...
Yeah, I like that.
A non-married or a non-childbearing kid or non-father of what's it called, Steven Spielberg, probably would have taken more of a chance like that.
Maybe.
That we take in Schindler's List, I would say. In Schindler's List, we take more of that.
I think so.
What's it called? I think he redeems himself, Schindler's List, in comparison to this movie. Of showing that other aspect.
Yeah.
But like I said... As a trial phase, I guess, if you want to look at the kind of movies he's making for war, I think it's a pretty good start. I don't want to mention really this, you know, the Indiana Jones movies because they're just kind of like there's a war going on, but we're just kind of touching base. It happens every so often, you know.
Yeah, Nazis are here.
Encounters.
Yeah, yeah,
and it's like funny Nazi shit that happens.
No, yeah, no, they're like
they're comical. Like, yeah, they feel comical. Yeah. And compared to this one, this is an actual thing.
Right, no, for sure.
So those are two important scenes that are memorable for me.
I like that. I like that a lot. I don't really have any, except for one that I really liked is the scene when they touch on his burgeoning manhood. When he is, because he's sleeping in the orphan's quarters, right? But where the younger 12, but he's older already, a little bit older. He's like 13. And there's this couple that's taking care of them. One of them is by Miranda Richardson. And there's a scene where it reflects with the beautiful shots of the explosions in the background.
Very great
in the sky. And how the husband wants to
have sex. By the way, The Wind Rises.
Yeah,
that's
it does.
That's
those, yeah, that's a good one. And they touch on this in this one scene, this or two scenes of him like glancing her way. You know, of her own beauty and him realizing and noticing that and not understanding it. And then later on that night with the bombs and everything, the husband trying to have sex with her and when everyone's asleep except for Jim. And he's looking and he's staring and not at the bombs. And which starts like, you know, it starts like showing this burgeoning manhood thing.
Yeah.
And I think the movie does a really good job of that. If the movie had done, had been more or focused more on that, maybe it showed a change of the camp in his eyes. I think from that point on, if they'd done that, that would have been a really cool start. It didn't do that. It just kind of does it in this one scene. But it was a really cool shot. Like independently from the movie, it's a good shot. It's a good scene.
I 100%. Yeah, I agree. Okay. I agree. Yeah.
So that's Empire of the Sun. Check it out. I don't know where it's available, if it isn't to buy or rent.
There's no way you can't not watch this movie on VOD somewhere.
Yes. No, yeah, definitely. I just wonder if it was free anywhere in a subscription.
It might be like an HBO or something. You never know.
Maybe. All right. So that is it
free,
for our show.
If you look at it, you're paying for service.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's free how when you look at it.
Right.
Exactly. So that's it for our show. You have been listening to Another Movie Podcast. Remember to send us a rating. Give us a rating. Yes. On iTunes, that would be the best way to help others to check out our show without you doing any, just a minimal effort, you know. Also, don't forget to check out our website, otherpodcasts.com, to find out all the stuff we have on there and we will be having. The calendar is up to date as of now, so you can check it out for bonus episodes and whatnot and the next show. You can send me feedback also to podmoviecast@gmail.com. Anything and any of these movies or anything coming up in the future, or maybe a movie you want to recommend, that'd be great to let us know. You can follow me personally, though, on Twitter and on Letterboxd for my movie watching habits at Armen Filmmaker, which is filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Ralph?
You can follow me on Twitter at Gamer Ralph. That is with two R's and an F.
Sweet. Remember, we are a bi-weekly show coming every other 2 weeks. So next 2 weekends from now, we'll be reviewing the Steven Spielberg marathon movie will be Hook, which is one of yours, Ralph.
Hook. Talk about child bewilderment and, like,
yeah, I know.
You know, everything that has to do with...
And that's Robin Williams, right?
Yeah.
I haven't seen this movie in a while. It's been a while.
So, yeah. I'm kind of looking forward to it.
And here are the next two movies. And the next two movies are strange, and one of them might change, but one of them is definitely for sure going to be Widows. We're watching Widows.
Okay.
And the other one right now is The Girl in the Spider's Web, which I'm interested in for a lot of reasons, into watching. Okay.
Not just because the trailer seduced you?
No, the actress seduced me to watch it. She looked at, you're the Foy, man. Claire Foy is everywhere. So I do want to see for that reason. If that might change, though, because we usually don't pick so many movies that are only in theaters. So I might change it to a VOD release or something. But we'll find out. Until then, that is what we're going to do. And until then, I'm Oscar.
He's Oscar.
Yes, he is.
And I'm Ralph.
Later.
In case I don't see you. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.